WFORadio.com presents NHRA Nitro.
I'm Joe Costello, and this is WFO Radio NHRA Nitro. A weekly look inside the baddest motorsport in the world, NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing.
It's side by side, it's competition, and it's who wins, and then the chair of the crowd.
Join me as we go WFO with the stars of drag racing.
Hey, I'm Bob Tasca.
I'm Tony Schumacher.
Hey, you're with Matt Hagen.
Hey, this is Ron Capp, Matt Hagen's personal friend. You're on WFO.
NHRA track announcer Alan Reinhart stops by each week to break down each race and answer your email questions.
I mean, the Nitro cars put on a tremendous show. They're otherworldly machines. But for people that are really interested in cars, I mean, you wander through the Superstock pits, and if you're wondering why you don't see 69 Camaros running around on the street anymore, it's because they're all out there in the stock and Superstock pits.
Racing fans from around the globe, it's time to go WFO with Joe Costello.
WFO Radio. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. What's up, NHRA fans? We've got a WFO Winners Edition for you, following up the Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals, presented by the Tri-Cities Area Ford Dealers out there at Bristol Dragway. I was there. It was awesome. And we have got the winners. If you're a first-time listener, if you were out at the track, and maybe you're going to check out WFO for the first time, well, you picked the right week, because we have got Top Fuel winner, first time in 2014, the reigning Mellow Yellow World Champion Sean Langdon, going to be on this show, going to tell us all about his first win in 2014, the essence of what it takes to throttle back a car and win with a pedal fest. He's going to tell us all about it on this show. Also on the show, funny car winner Tommy Johnson Jr. The long road, what a long road it has been for Tommy, working as a track specialist, opening his own business in drag racing, to get back to the cockpit of a funny car. He finally did it and cashes in with a win, his father in attendance at a track that he has a personal history at. We're going to hear from Tommy Johnson Jr. on this show, get in depth about his first win in a long time. Very emotional victory for Tommy Johnson and his fans. Also on the show, she might have had the biggest fan base in the house all weekend. Erica Enders Stevens had done so well at the track but not cashed in for a win. Finally does it, defeating Jonathan Gray in the final round. Erica runs Jag and Greg and gets red lights in both of those rounds, able to win. We're going to speak with Erica on this show. And the pro modified cars were there. They were wild. They were all over the place. Final round, Pete Farber against Steve Matuzik, who's going to be a first-time winner in 2014. First-time winner in NHRA, period, for either of the two. Pete Farber comes out on top. We'll speak with Pete from Pro Modified on this show. So if you're a fan of NHRA drag racing, if you like drag racing, like racing, maybe you're a NASCAR fan checking out the show for the first time, get in, get ready. We're going to entertain you for the next hour or so here on WFO Radio. And probably more like so than an hour. And we start them all off the same way each week with the voice of the NHRA, who is out on the road somewhere, Alan Reinhart. Alan, welcome back. How are you?
Joe, great to be back. I am fantastic. It is an absolute beautiful day in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and looking forward to hitting the racetrack again this weekend.
We are getting busy, race after race after race after race, 4 weeks in a row. You are already the next city. I was in Bristol. I will be in Epping in a few days. I'm looking forward to it. But you're living on the road, man.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense to go, you know, I live out on the West Coast, and so it doesn't make any sense to fly all the way across the country and then turn around and fly all the way back across the country when I have to be here to do a press conference tomorrow. So it just makes a whole lot more sense just to stay out, come up here, find a place to do laundry, and gives me an opportunity to be a tourist. I'm going to actually go catch a Red Sox game. So that's my agenda for tonight, taking advantage of being out here.
Baseball enemy territory for a Yankee fan like myself, but I would like to see Fenway Park as well. That's on the bucket list. Got to check the place out. It's obviously legendary. Have you ever been there?
I have not. No, I have not. And it just kind of the same thing. You know, you've seen it on TV so many times, and you know all the history that has taken place there over the years. So when the opportunity came up, it's like, you know, you're going to be here. You're going to be 40 miles away or whatever it is, and why wouldn't you take the opportunity to go check the place out? So that's what I'm going to do. Kind of like today when I landed, I went to Cheers in Boston and had lunch.
No way. How is it? What does it look like? Did they all say, Alan, when you walked in?
No, they didn't. And I waited. I waited, and nobody stood up and yelled my name. But you can definitely get the feel of it. You know, the TV show Cheers, the restaurant was patterned after a Bullfinch pub that is a real place here in Boston. The story goes that the producers were kind of looking around, looking for locations to shoot, and stopped in this place for lunch and went, wow, this is us. And so the bar was born. But it's a pretty cool place, and it's just a neat little tourist thing. Like I said, you know, if you're in Boston, why not?
Oh, I might have to do it. I might have to do it. I'm going to be in Boston. I like it, and I'm a big fan of Cheers. You know, Norm Peterson, Cliff Clavin, who always gave interesting statistics about Florida, where I am from. So I had a, you know, connection with him.
Yeah, there's actually a couple of bars that are called Cheers, but the one that the original was patterned after is called the Bullfinch Pub. Just plug in your GPS, and it's about 20 minutes or so from the airport, give or take.
See, I would like to go to see Gary's Old Town Tavern, who was the arch nemesis of Cheers.
Yes,
they were
yes.
The bar down the street.
And you know what? I don't know if that place actually even exists. Now that you mention it, I never thought about that. But,
yeah.
I was at Cheers. I certainly wasn't going to go to enemy territory after that.
Go to the Nemesis bar instead of the actual Cheers bar. Boy, that would really frost them. But this past week, we were in Bristol, and what a spectacular event. We've been talking about it on the show for weeks, promoting the event. Saw a ton of WFO listeners out there, which was very, very cool. But what a great facility and a very strong crowd.
Yeah, it was pretty good. You know, like, we had weather. You know, we had good weather, and that's all we really need. A little storm come in on Friday night and took away the last couple of funny cars in the top fuel session that we're supposed to run prime time. But Saturday and Sunday was mid-80s, sunny skies, and just a beautiful day to be at the races. And when you have a day like that, then the folks will come out. You know, it's hard to blame people if it's cold and if the weather forecast is lousy and it may rain and it's for sitting home. You know, I can't say that I blame them a whole lot. But give us good weather and we'll take care of the rest. And this weekend, Saturday and Sunday at least, we had great weather.
I deem successful events as events that have a 3-second funny car run. If you see a three, that's a great event.
Yeah, we certainly had an opportunity to see more than one right up until the weather came rolling in on Friday night. Because Del Worsham went to 399, which is a track record and his career best by a couple of thousandths. And we had four pretty good cars just sitting under the tower that didn't get to run. But, you know, it still ended up being a pretty entertaining and exciting race on Sunday.
Let's get into the round by round. We've got the drivers coming up on the show, folks. Sean Langdon and Tommy Johnson. Erica going to be on. Pete Farber going to be on. But let's start off with Top Fuel, where if you recall this show last week, you gave a interesting stat about one spot remaining in the Traxxas shootout and how the pressure was on. And I don't know if these guys were listening or if they just knew inherently, but the bottom line is we had talked about how Alan Abi was probably going to not let that hang out there too long. Sure enough, somehow, Sean Langdon goes out there and gets that final spot in the Traxxas shootout by winning the race.
It didn't look like in qualifying that he was going to be the odds-on favorite on Sunday. He ran decent, but qualified seventh, and then that set him up with an intramural skirmish in the first round with Khaled Al-Balushi, his teammate. And even on Sunday, they have the best race car, but the scoreboard kept turning on, and they made it work. You know, spoke to Alan Johnson a little bit in the winner's circle afterwards, and he said that everybody in the pits was almost rooting for Brittany to win because they all know they can't have a popularity contest against her when it comes down to the fan vote part of the Traxxas shootout for the eighth car. And they all figured, you know, and they all being, you know, himself and Steve Torrance and you know, J.R. Todd and the hitter cars that are not yet qualified in this thing, that if Brittany, then, you know, hey, they'd have a chance going head-to-head against each other, but nobody wanted to go up against Brittany, and he said this way he feels a whole lot better about it, since Sean is a defending champion of the Traxxas shootout anyway. Now he's back in, he'll have an opportunity to hammer it out, and, you know, the rest of the guys will have to get lucky in the lottery, because I'm pretty sure that Brittany's going to have the most of the fan vote.
Yeah, that is interesting. The Greek gets Byer in the first round, though. I know that was kind of a shocking upset for a lot of people, but at the same time, any round win for Chris Caramassini's, I think, is very, very popular.
Yeah, it was cool. You know, he's been out here doing it for so long. And, you know, I'm not personally, you know, Mike English contacted his daughter and said that they came up with the number 82 as far as his age. Seems to me he was 82 5 years ago, but maybe that's just me. It's just nice that he's still out there, you know, competing and dedicated so much of his life to. you know, Brittany's car smoked the tires in round one, and that's why he was able to get around her. She qualified in number one spot for the second time this year and second time of her career. But, you know, the number one qualifier, not necessarily place to be for a vast majority of the year, and it certainly wasn't again here this past weekend.
You mentioned Langdon gets by his teammate in the first round, and then a pedal fest against Terry McMillan. Vandergriff goes red in the semi, setting up a final round against Doug Coletta. Doug had actually pretty tough road, had to go through Antron in the semis, got by Leah in the first round and the Greek in the second round. That's seven final rounds now for that Mac Tools machine.
And that was a discussion that was taking place on Sunday evening, is if you are the Colettas, are you having a great year or not so much? I mean, if you told somebody, hey, you're going to go to seven final rounds in the first 10 races, everybody on the planet would say, great. But if you've been to seven final rounds and have only won one of them, I mean, you got to start feeling like, come on, really? Surely we can close the deal more often than that. You know, they've certainly had a great car. They hazed the tires in the final round against Sean to let him go ahead and get it. But seven final rounds and only one win. You know, Tony Schumacher showed years ago that you can final round your way to the championship without stacking up the wins. So, you know, the car's definitely running well. And the old NASCAR saying, if, you know, you run in the top five every week, you're going to get your wins. I'm kind of a believer that, you know, you go to the final every week, you're going to get your wins. It just boggles the mind that a car that's been that good has been to seven final rounds and yet only took home one trophy.
That's like 14% win percentage, but they are amassing points. And right now, I had a conversation with one of the Nitro crew chiefs out there, and it was basically... The conversation basically was like this. Winning early in the season is great. Of course, winning is great. But winning at the end of the season is much more important during the countdown. And so as much as one may get away now, figuring out how to win then is really the priority.
I agree with that 100%. But I also know that, you know, this is a bit of a momentum kind of sport. And, you know, you get to the final round, and if you start getting the, oh, geez, what's going to go wrong this week mentality because you've been so close so many times and not gotten it done, you know, I think anytime a team hasn't won in a long time, I think it's important for them just to mentally know that, you know what, we can still do this. We can close the deal. We can get it done. And, you know, it's kind of like Steve Torrence, the first part of the season, was going semifinal every week and could never make the final. Semifinal every week, could never make the final. And then you start going, you know, be careful what you wish for. You know, if you're going, geez, can we just please not lose in the semifinals? And now he hasn't been to the semifinals in three races. So, you know, you need to stay focused. You need to stay positive. But it's just, and from a morale standpoint, you really need to close some of those deals.
Doug Coletta has a 120-point lead. The reigning Mellow Yellow champion is third with 151 points and now in the Traxxas shootout. Let's move on to Funny Car. Very popular win there, Tommy Johnson Jr. We mentioned the long road and all the different jobs, odd jobs, things that TJ did. Kind of an example, I think, to anybody in any profession that really wants to be there, that you got to stick it out and do some things you might not like to get to the point and the place that you want to be.
Well, you know, there's so much of life, I think, is being in the right place at the right time. And you can't always determine what the right time is. But if you know where the place is, you just need to go there and park. And, you know, that's basically what Tommy did. You know, spent a lot of time out at the racetrack when he wasn't driving. Worked as a track specialist for DSR. Did a couple other jobs for some different teams. Worked with the ESPN guys on a number of shows, being a pit reporter and lending his expertise from, you know, being a winner in both Top Fuel and Funny Car, and stayed out there. Stayed, you know, kept his face in front of everybody. When the opportunity came for Terry Chandler to hire a driver, you know, he was forefront. It's not like, gee, what was that guy's name that used to drive the Skull car all those years ago? Does anybody know how to get a hold of him? He was standing right there. And that gave him the inside track to the job. And, you know, I don't think anybody ever doubted that he had the ability to do it. John Collins, a rookie crew chief on that car now, you know, he's been around the sport a long time and picked up his first win as well as Tommy's first in 7 years. So, and, you know, and the first DSR Funny Car win, which I still think is just absolutely stunning. You know, last year DSR won half of the races in Funny Car, and this year we're 10 races into the season. They've won now one. I asked Tommy about it in the press room. I said, you know, the dragsters have had a lot of success this year, and the funny cars, not so much. I said, is that, you know, do you guys, when you're in the shop, is there, you know, the funny cars? And he said, oh, trust me, we hear about it. He said, you know, they're, you know, pep talks or whatever you want to call it from the, you know, hey, you guys need to step up here a little bit and start performing. So definitely took some of the pressure off of his team. Terry Chandler, who funds that car completely and totally, was just ecstatic to be there. And, you know, that was going to be a popular win no matter who won the final round, because there wouldn't have been a whole lot of people disappointed if Tim Wilkerson had won it. You know, the 3 years that it's been since he's hoisted a trophy, and you know, like I said, whoever won that final, that was going to be a happy winner's circle, and there weren't going to be too many disappointed people.
You had said it a couple weeks ago that Wilkerson was going to win one of these next four races, and came very, very close. Now, I think it's worth saying, a lot of people ask me, you make a point when you're on the mic to mention the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and that they are not contributing to the car, that the car is actually a way of contributing to them. Why is it so important to make that point every time, Alan? I've gotten that question off the air a few times. There's a reason that you do that.
Well, the reason is because I wouldn't want, and they wouldn't want, anybody to say, well, I'm not going to donate to Make-A-Wish because they're just spending their money on a race car. And that's why they want to be absolutely crystal clear that Make-A-Wish donations do not go to the race car. The race car is completely independently funded. The reason I say it every time is plain and simple. I don't know that everybody heard it last time. I don't know that somebody's tuned in on the web that hasn't been listening. I don't know that we have first-time people. You know as well as I do, Joe, now that you've been out on the road doing some of the races, there are a number of our fans that don't necessarily follow the sport week to week to week.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
They come out one race a year. You know, hey, if you live in Bristol, maybe you're a huge NASCAR fan. But when the drags are in town, hey, we'll go out to Thunder Valley and check the drag races out. But they're not necessarily following every week. They're not chasing the championship. They're fans that come out the one time when we're in town. And it's important that they know crystal clear that, you know, this is not a charity spending money on a race car. It is a lady who has had a lot of success in life and in business, who very much loves drag racing, and who wants to do something for people that are less fortunate. And obviously, you know, the kids that are being helped out by the Make-A-Wish program, you know, there's not a whole lot of people that do more important work than they do. When you think about, you know, the kids that go through that program and the fact that they get a bright spot and a life that is in desperate need of a bright spot at that particular point in time. So, and I know, you know, when the Make-A-Wish car came out, there were some people who publicly said, you know, well, I won't be donating to them anymore because they're just spending their money on a race car. And that's why it's very important to me to make that point very strongly that that's not the case. As Tommy Johnson said in a press conference earlier in the season, he said, Make-A-Wish doesn't sponsor us. We sponsor them. We're trying to do something nice, raise a little awareness. They have kids on a regular basis come out to the racetrack, Make-A-Wish kids, even if that's not necessarily, you know, their wish or what Make-A-Wish is doing for them. If there's kids in the neighborhood where we're having a race and, you know, a day to come out and hang out with the race car driver and get an up-close and personal look is a special deal. So there's a lot to that program that goes into the race team doing something for Make-A-Wish, not the other way around.
Very good point, and a point that needs to be made, and I'm glad we spent a little bit of time. And TJ getting the win, his dad was in the house. It was actually a cool day with Tony Pedregon getting to the semis. That was pretty cool. And Matt Hagen versus Tommy in the semis, who was going to go to the final round for DSR. And Matt Hagen, has he given the thumbs up, thumbs down to the nickname that I've heard you use, Hulk Hagen? Because I think that I wanted to call him the Beast, because the guy looks like a beast, but I think Hulk Hagen works better.
Well, I know that he's heard me say it, and he hasn't yet come up in the tower and said, if you call me that one more time, I'll break you in half. So I'm thinking he's probably okay with it.
Like a piece of spaghetti, just uncooked spaghetti, just snap, just like that. The guy, when he gets out of the race car with the helmet and the Hans and the way he walks over to the truck, it's an awesome sight. The guy is he's Hulk Hagen, let's put it that way. Moving over to Pro Stock. By the way, we're going to hear from Tommy Johnson on this show. He's going to tell us all about it, folks, if you're a TJ fan.
And one last little funny car bit just now that you know, those guys are now getting into the same territory that the dragster guys were as far as the tracks of shootout. There's not going to be a whole lot of spots left, so a few of those guys need to get busy with only one DSR car being in there.
You know, I'm glad you brought that back up, because there was a point I wanted to ask, something I mentioned last week. The losing to Brittany in the popularity contest angle of it, why do you think she has got that so easily wrapped? And I think I know what your answer is going to be. And then if your answer is what I think it's going to be, which is the John Force marketing machine, why don't other race teams put more emphasis on this very important aspect of activating and connecting with the fans, either through social media or some campaign? Jegs is also very good at it as well, by the way, I want to point out. But why don't some of these other teams attempt to connect the way the Forces do?
I think they definitely do attempt. It's just that it's a very difficult thing to do. You know, John Force, his marketing team and his PR folks over the years have amassed, you know, a tremendous database, you know, an email list of fans and friends, and you know, if you go onto their website and you buy anything, well, then they've got an outlet to send a note to you. And if you send an email blast out to everybody that you know, and those, whatever, 3,000 people all vote for you, and JFR sends out a blast to everybody throughout the media, throughout, you know, their fan base, throughout, you know, Twitter and Facebook and everybody that follows, not just Brittany, but Brittany and Courtney and Ashley and Robert and everybody on the team, and say, hey, do this, you know, they are going to be reaching 30,000 people. So even if every one of yours votes, they just have so much more reach, I think, as far as connecting with the fans. And you know, I think that gives them a tremendous advantage.
It definitely does, and we'll see. But the way things are going, Brittany Force definitely building her fan base, running well over the past couple of years. And that's all true for Funny Car as well. You gotta stay connected with the fans, because at some point it can pay off.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, if you've got a point, make it.
Well, I was just going to, you know, just for the record, it's not exclusively the fan vote that makes it happen. There's still a possibility for somebody else to win. The way the Traxxas, the eighth spot for the Traxxas shootout is set up for both the Funny Car and Top Fuel drivers, is it's a lottery draw with literally lotto balls in a lottery machine. And the percentage of the vote that you get is the percentage of lottery balls that you have in the machine. So if you get 65% of the fan vote and everybody else splits the other 35%, then you're going to have 65 balls in that lottery machine, and the odds are that yours is going to come out. So far, the couple of times that they've done it, the person with the mathematical advantage has ended up being the person that got in. Now, it's still possible that it could go the other way, and one of the reasons that they did that is because Traxxas didn't want it to just be a popularity contest. They just wanted everybody to have a chance to get in that thing, and that being everybody that runs full-time on the tour. So it's a neat little event that a lot of fans actually come out and join us for. They do a big fan fest in downtown Indianapolis the last couple of years in Monument Circle. They'll have a lot of race cars on display and a lot of drivers out there to greet the fans, sign autographs. We do the press conference down there and draw that Traxxas spot right there. So if you're planning on coming to Indy, just keep your eyes on NHRA.com. I believe it'll happen Thursday afternoon during the U.S. Nationals downtown.
Very cool. Great point to make on that, because I do like that the underdog can still win. You don't have to have that ultimate marketing machine. Now, Erica Ender-Stevens, a couple of tough races with a very quick machine, goes out there and able to capitalize when a couple of competitors light the red light, and Erica goes to the final round from the number 3 qualifying position and wins in Thunder Valley.
She's had a lot of success, as you said right at the top of the show. She's had won a lot of rounds in Thunder Valley, but has never been able to close the deal. And, you know, they really struggled with that car in qualifying. As of the first 3 qualifying sessions, she had only pulled the parachutes one time. You know, one time it just blew the tires off of it. The second time she said that she could have got it down there if she was racing, but since it was qualifying and she knew that it just wasn't a pretty run, she shoved the clutch back in. They did make a very nice run in the qualifying session number 4 to put her in the number 1 spot, and then she got bumped back to the number 3 spot by the time the session was over with, but at least at that point it looked like the performance of the car was back on track. You know, Greg Anderson going red against her in the second round, I don't want to say I was I wasn't quite as stunned. She had a performance advantage on him. You know, I think everybody knows the history between those two. And Greg, to his credit, has been driving very well. He's been in the tens and in the teens on the tree. He's definitely been helping his team out with his clutch foot. Just got a little bit over the edge that time. I was very surprised to see Jaggy go red in the semifinals because Jeg did have the performance advantage. He did have the quicker car in the early rounds. You know, not by a ton, but I guess what do you call a ton in pro stock, right? 0.02 of a second in pro
yeah.
stock is quite a bit. But, you know, he went out there and fouled there. And the classic case of, you know, 20/20 hindsight. When you look back, it's like, okay, he outran her, I think, 0.03 in that run. And, you know, he had room. You know, it wasn't like he had to be 005 or he had to be 10 on the tree to win the race. But he just went out there, and whether he rolled her in a little deep or had some other issue, but that gave Erica the opportunity. And she's had a good car, and a lot of times you make your own luck. I'm certainly not saying she didn't deserve the success that she's had, but that was a round that really surprised me. And then Jonathan, I think, knocked the clutch out of the car in a burnout in the final round. It looked like he stuck the tire when he was trying to do the burnout, and that will make a very unhappy clutch in your car. It didn't get very far when he let the clutch out. He just sat there and watched Erica drive down to the victory.
Great weekend, though, for Jonathan Gray, nonetheless, and the Gray family with Shane with his first number one qualifier and Jonathan making the final round. Those two had to run in the second round. They had identical elapsed times. The Gray family and Terry Chandler, obviously, as the funding owner of the Make-A-Wish car. That's a big weekend out there in Thunder Valley.
Yeah, it is. You know, Jonathan Gray had one round win on his resume before he got to Bristol and then picked up three, you know, ultimately losing in the final. But that's still a good day at the office for, you know, a new team. And I believe Jonathan Gray is still eligible for Rookie of the Year. I know he made a couple of starts last year, but I think he kept it under the magic number. So, you know, for everybody that was already automatically filling Richie Crampton's name in on the ballot, you know, let's not forget about Jonathan. Let's not forget Chaz Kennedy is also a rookie, even though, you know, the bikes are going to start hitting their stride here pretty soon. So if he goes out there and starts making some noise, then his stock will go up a little bit. But how about the fact that 10 races into the season, the number one qualifier in pro stock has yet to win?
Unbelievable.
It has never happened before, 10 races in the season.
It's never happened before ever.
We've never been 10 races into the season without a number one qualifier winning in pro stock.
That makes perfect sense because of the dominance of the people with the fastest machine in pro stock, whether it be a Bob Glidden or a Warren Johnson or a Lee Sheppard or going all the way back, Greg Anderson. Those guys tend to find their way to a win at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there usually has been one car that has been that good. You know, it's been Mike Edwards the last couple of years. And right now, there really isn't one car that's head and shoulders above everybody else. You know, Erica's running well. The Dodgers are running well. You know, the Summit guys are a tick off the pace. They're certainly good enough to win races because we've seen that. But they're not running 1/100 and a half or 0.02 in front of the pack like they were for a couple of years. You know, the Gray Racing team looks like they're getting better, getting a little bit closer. You know, obviously with Shane having the number one shot this weekend. But there isn't really a dominant car, and so, you know, the 1, 2, 3, 4 guys are all pretty much just a coin flip as far as, you know, who's got the performance advantage. It's going to be who doesn't make a mistake on Sunday. And so far this year, the number one guy just hasn't been that guy to pull it off on Sunday.
A couple of other points of note on Pro Stock, then we'll move on. Alan Johnson, heartbreak for Alan at his home track once again. I saw local news at the golf tournament they had before the race. I don't want to say on his case, but they were like, hey, you said you're going to win in 2012 and 2013, you know, what's going on? And he's like, 2014's the year, and car didn't get down the racetrack. He's got a guy who has had so much success, generally a champion, and as an owner and as an engine builder, just having a tough time at the one track he really wants to win at.
And strangely enough, he didn't run very well in qualifying either. I mean, you know, he qualified fifth, which isn't like, gee, he forgot to show up. But, you know, that car has been one of the 1, 2, 3 cars all year long. And, you know, for whatever reason, this weekend it wasn't. Well, when you qualify fifth and end up with somebody like Dave Conley in round one, you just don't have any room for error. And that's, you know, that's exactly what happened to him is, you know, Conley made a good run. Alan certainly looked like he had a car that was capable of beating Dave. But when he let the clutch out and it started drifting towards the center line, it kind of kept drifting. He said he couldn't get it back and came down to, well, I'm either going to hit one of these cones or I'm going to take my foot off the gas, and either way I'm going to lose. So, you know, he decided to save the cone. And Bob Brockmeyer says, thank you so much for that. But, yeah, it was really just a tough deal because he wants it so bad here. You know, all of his business associates, the people that work for him, he lives 20 miles down the road. You know, he has a suite at the tower that's full of supporters and you know, business people and just wants to go out there and do well for him. You know, had a barbecue in his pits on Saturday night, fed a number of his folks as well as a number of the other pro stock contingent. And anybody that saw the ESPN thing, they had the coolest ice cream maker in the history of the world out there. And then, you know, for all of that to be by lunchtime Sunday, you're done, it was a pretty disappointing way to end the weekend.
Alan was super cool. I got to enjoy some of that ice cream from that maker. It was really cool. A hit-miss engine, which I knew nothing about it, but a gentleman there explained to me all about it and how those were very, very important to the growth of our nation, because, you know, turning, you know, rotating energy into either working a plow or a machine shop or just so many different things, that there were hundreds of thousands of them around the country, and now this one's used to make ice cream. It was very, very cool. I certainly appreciated it. Pete Farber, going to be on the show, wins his first NHRA Pro Mod race.
The whole Pro Mod thing was just wild. You know, when we got down, when you looked at the second round and on the top half of the ladder, there wasn't a single guy there that had ever won a race. And, you know, Mike Castellana and Mike Janis were the only two in the second round that had ever hoisted a trophy. And just from top to bottom, the thing, it was a very fun, wild, crazy weekend of Pro Modifieds. What, 24 of them or 25 of them on the property? You know, a couple of big-name guys that went home very early, and by that I mean before first round. You know, that final qualifying session was just a riot. You know, when you come into the final qualified session, you got guys like Troy Coffin not qualified. I think Ricky Smith had to fight his way in that last session. You just know it's going to be a very competitive race, and that's what it was.
It was very cool. We'll speak with Pete, first NHRA Pro Mod win on the show. Other winners, Larry Miller in Super Stock. Drew Skillman had a chance to double up, wins in Stock. Jeff Taylor wins in Super Comp. Scott Lawton in Super Gas. Tony Fagnilli in Top Sportsman. And Anthony Bertazzi in Top Dragster.
Yeah, that's some pretty big-name players out there. You get Bertazzi and Taylor. And you know, Drew Skillman hasn't won a championship yet, but he finished number two last year in that Stock Eliminator class. And he certainly is a force to be reckoned with in the sportsman ranks. But same thing, it was just a fun day at the office. We had, you know, great cars. When you look at that Super Stock final, you got a 440 six-pack E-body Barracuda against Skillman's Ford. That's cool. On the other side, it was a, 68-69 Nova small block car against a Cobra Jet. Yeah, that's cool. The semifinals, when Drew Skillman had to take on Michael Brown, that's two top 10 players from last year that have just as opposite of cars as you could get, you know, early 70s Pontiac versus, you know, 14 model Mustang. It was a fun race. It was, you know, almost no downtime. You know, the race ran so smoothly that we actually took a break Sunday afternoon because you build in a little bit of time to take care of some of the issues that usually come up during the day, and just didn't have any of those. And, you know, it's just a nice, clean, fun day. I think it was one of those races that, you know, if a fan came out there and it was the first time he'd come to an NHRA race and he didn't think that was cool, then, you know what, try something else, because we had what I think was just a very exciting race. It was entertaining. We had close racing. We had performance racing. We had pedal fests. We had, you know, just a little bit of everything. And I thought it was a very entertaining race, a very nice day at the racetrack. And, of course, Jerry Caldwell and Brandon and all of the staff there do so much to make us feel welcome and do so much to make the fans have a good experience as well. I think, you know, Saturday and Sunday were pretty close to as good as it gets.
I agree wholeheartedly. It was an awesome experience. But now headed to Epping, and this is the second year of this race, kind of an interesting juxtaposition going from one of the mega facilities in Thunder Valley of Bruton Smith Tracks to Epping, New Hampshire, which is a smaller track, obviously second year on the tour, making all kinds of capital improvements. But what I want to know, Alan, what if everybody that showed up last year brings one friend with them this year? What's going to happen?
We won't have room for them all.
Right? It's going to be packed, which is great. Everyone loved that race last year.
Well, you know, inaugural races are a pretty easy sell because, There's so many people up here that, you know, NHRA for years and years and years has wanted to be here. There are so many fans up here that for years and years and years have wanted NHRA to be here. And so it was a classic case of, you know, everybody coming out to show their support. And, you know, the track is kind of, it's kind of an old school track, but you know what? So's Maple Grove. And that's one of the most fun places to go on tour. And, you know, the fans in this part of the country, hopefully that's what will happen, is that everybody that came out last year enjoyed the show and is going to come back and bring somebody. You know, maybe anybody that sat out last year says, well, you know, we'll kind of wait and see how it goes over. They should have gotten the memo by now that it went very well, thank you, and be making their plans to come out. But from what I've seen, the weather's supposed to be nice, and, you know, this is just such a great part of the country. So people are so friendly and so welcoming, and, you know, there's just, again, lots of see and do. I'm going to go to Fenway Park tonight and watch a baseball game. You know, last year, just sitting on the bay watching the boats go back and forth and eating the freshest seafood, that it almost felt like, you know, you ordered lobster and they just went and pulled one out of the ocean for you. It's just a, this whole week is a special event. It's not just the race that makes this part of the country special, and that's why I really enjoy coming up here and getting to spend a little bit of time and checking it out.
Totally agree. I will be there on Friday, actually getting in on Thursday. You are there now. I'm looking forward to hanging out with you once again, Alan. Great job, as usual. Much appreciated. You're starting us off in a strong way here on WFO.
Well, Joe, it's always a pleasure to do this, and I'm looking forward to hearing what the winners have to say. And, well, we'll do it all again here in just a couple of days.
Lots of winners' editions coming up here on WFO Radio. Alan, thank you very much.
All right, Joe. Travel safe. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Alan. The voice of the NHRA, Alan Reinhardt, joins us each week right here on WFO Radio. And now it's time to hear from the drivers. We've got them coming up. If you're a first-time listener, you clicked on the link, well, stick with us for the whole show. Remember, you don't have to listen in all one sitting. You can have some today and some tomorrow and some the next day. Most WFO Radio listeners listen Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at some point. Some people listen right at 7 p.m. on Tuesday night when the show becomes available. They're clicking on it. Others wait till Tuesday to chew up a little bit of their work week. Some have a little portion whenever they can. And you can do it however you like. The show is available on demand. We have got Sean Langdon, the reigning Mellow Yellow World Champion for Allen Abbey Racing, coming up. We got Tommy Johnson Jr., Erica Ender Stevens, and Pete Farber, all you fans of Pro Modified. We're going to get to them after this. But first, I want to tell you about Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School, one of our sponsors here on WFO. And hopefully, you have checked out the website, frankhawley.com. Maybe you haven't gone to the website. Maybe you're a fan of History Channel's show Top Gear, and you witnessed the recent episode where Rutledge Wood and Tanner Faust battled each other in super stock cars at the NHRA Gator Nationals. Well, where did they get their competition driver's license? Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. That's where. And if it's good enough for Top Gear, it should be good enough for you. You got to check out the show, but also check out the website. You can go to WFOradio.com and click on the banner ad, or you can go to frankhawley.com. Either way, the website will come up, and you can learn about the side-by-side racing that the Dragster Adventure offers you. A chance to drive a dragster and go 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. Think about that. There is no other driving school or experience that is going to let you do that. Drive the car by yourself, race against another student. That is super cool. It's called the Dragster Adventure, and they've got one coming up July 5th in St. Louis, Missouri, and they've got one coming up in Norwalk later on in the year as well. Go to the website, go to frankhawley.com to find out more. It is a great situation to be able to belt yourself into a roll cage and mash the gas. There is no other experience like it. You can find out for yourself. Give them a call, 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223. Maybe you want to upgrade your license or get a super comp or super gas license. I say this all the time. For you bracket racers, are you not winning? You should be winning. Frank can tell you things that may help you win. Go to frankhawley.com to find out more. We'll be back after this with Sean Langdon right here on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
Line Synthetic Oil has been building the world's finest motor oil, gear oil, and additives, like our popular water wetter, for over 30 years. Think we're just for racers? Think again. Redline has the multi-grade viscosity available for your domestic, European, or Japanese vehicle. From 0W20 to 5W30, even 10W60, Redline motor oils are specifically designed to exceed the factory's demands, giving you longer drain intervals at lower oil temperatures. Is your off-the-shelf motor oil missing the zinc you need to protect your camshaft? Every bottle of Redline motor oil has more than enough zinc to suit your engine's needs. The same ester-based stocks found in Redline motor oil are also in our gear oils for manual transmissions and differentials. Known around the globe as the best in protection, regardless of price. Check us out at redlineoil.com to find a dealer, or even buy online. Racing technology engineered for the street. That's Redline Oil.
Android and iPhone users, download the WFO Radio app. It's sports radio for racing fans.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
The ultimate racing show, including WFO Radio NHRA Nitro, WFO Radio Ignition, the WFO Radio NASCAR Tailgate Party, news, videos, push notifications, and more.
I just hope I'm part of it.
Go to the App Store or Android Market, search WFO Radio, and download it now.
Hey, everybody. The summer is here, and that means it's time to grill. Remember just a couple of months ago when you were freezing and you were thinking, I can't wait until I can get out there and grill something? Well, now you can, and if you're going to do it, you got to do it with the most awesome barbecue rubs going. Check out RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. Marvin Rodak, a big NHRA fan and WFO radio listener, has award-winning spice rubs that you can order online or by phone. Go to RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com, 817-924-6821. I just tried two new hot sauces that he's got going. The perfect condiment if you're grilling out this summer. Also, coffee in the morning. Marvin roasts his own blends. You got to try them out. RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. Or if you want to kick it old school, pick up the phone, dial 817-924-6821. Say, hey, Marvin, I heard about you on WFO. I want you to send me some coffee and barbecue rub, maybe some hot sauce, and it'll show up in the mail. That's 817-924-6821 for RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com.
The stars of drag racing. WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
What do you think about tying Bob Glidden when you look at the wins list and it's Bob Glidden, Dan Fletcher together? What does that mean to you historically?
When I sit there and I think about that, you know, and when someone like yourself says that, I mean, I'm tied with Bob Glidden. Bob freaking Glidden. Are you serious? I mean, an absolute icon of the sport. I'm just some moron bracket racer that, you know, got into stock and super stock, and, you know, I've got 269 Camaros that roll around the country trying to do my thing, and I'm tied with Bob Glidden, for crying out loud. That's crazy.
NHRA Nitro is available on demand at WFORadio.com. Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
NHRA Nitro here on WFO Radio, following up the Ford Thunder Valley Nationals. What a great weekend. Father's Day weekend, all kinds of great racing, but boy, was it hot. And at the end of the day, we got the final entrant into the Traxxas Shootout and Top Fuel. We're going to speak with the Top Fuel winner right now. He is the reigning Mellow Yellow Top Fuel World Champion for Alanabi Racing. Sean Langdon joins us now. Sean, first time 2014. Welcome.
Good to be back.
Now, was there ever a moment where you thought, I'm never going to win ever again?
No. I mean, you know, it's a... You kind of get those moments, but... Working with the Alanabi team, they're such a great team, and you know, you go through spurts in drag racing where you have to take the good with the bad, and you go through slumps and you go through your hot streaks, but maintaining that level of focus, you know, that's what this Alanabi team does, and we've just been struggling a little bit this year, but we knew a win was coming. It was a matter of time. We just had to stay patient and keep working hard.
When I was saying that, I'm mostly joking, because I think that most drag racing fans assume that there is never a moment where that even creeps into the minds of anyone at an Alan Johnson racing team. Either you guys are working on something or you're figuring out how to get ahead at the next phase, how to maintain the championship level, and it's just a matter of time. What was interesting, though, we spoke about it on the show, this whole track's a shootout deal. There was a bit of urgency there to get into that race and defend your title.
Yeah, there definitely was. You know, it's in the beginning of the year there was a bunch of different winners, and it just kind of slowly, one by one, started getting filled up a little bit more. And then when we lost that final to Spencer, it kind of really started weighing on our minds. And then with Richie winning in Englishtown, it was, you know, one spot left. So yeah, I mean, it was. It's something that you really don't try to think about, just because it's a bonus race, but it is for $100,000, and you kind of do get, it does weigh on your mind a little bit, and it gets to a point where, you know, hey, we got to start making things work, and the last couple races, we definitely felt as a team that we had a better shot to win the races than we did in Bristol. We didn't have the greatest car in Bristol. Didn't qualify well, but we just had a little bit of race day luck and ran the right people at the right time, and things worked out for us, and thankfully we're in the track for shootout.
Let's go round by round your race day, which started off against your teammate Khaled Al-Balushi. The good news is obviously one of the Alanabi machines is going to the second round. The bad news is one is loading up and put in the trailer. How did you guys prepare for that? Is it as a team, do you guys focus on the good side of it? Is it any different than running up against a competitor that is not a teammate?
Well, it's not really any different, for the fact of, you know, you go up there with the intention of winning that round. It is a little different just because we share our notes amongst each team with the gold car and the silver car. So, you know, there might be a little bit more communication, as far as you don't really necessarily racing another DSR or Morgan Lucas car. You're not giving them information about, you know, what kind of compression you're running or blower or tire size or anything like that. But, you know, I think it's just when we run each other, we just want a good, clean race with both cars and put on a good show for the fans. And, you know, unfortunately, Khaled smoked the tires, but fortunately for us, you know, we were able to move on and, you know, just keep gaining those metal yellow points.
So on a race like that, you guys have full access and they have full access to every detail of your tune-up as you guys are about to race. Up till what point? Because I think that's pretty interesting that you guys are laying all the cards out on the table, but I also know there are adjustments that get made right under the tower sometimes. I don't know if there were any in this situation since it was first round, but you guys are pretty much an open book in that situation.
Yeah, we're definitely an open book. I mean, you know, obviously Alan's the mastermind behind everything, and he's been doing a great job with Jason McCulloch and, you know, with the gold car, and Brian Huesen, you know, with the silver car. And so we actually have, Jake's got his computer, Brian's got his computer, Alan's got his computer. All three of them are linked together. So we can, you know, basically depending on the factors and everything of trying to calculate out the weather to get the compression in the blower, overdrive, and, you know, just some of the other stuff. We'll relay all that information back and forth. Tire size and all the different stuff like that. But I think a lot of the late adjustments they probably don't discuss too much, as far as what they do with changing some last minute, or like you talked about, the last minute changes, which is generally in the clutch area.
In the second round, you had to go up against Terry McMillan, and if there is a guy that is hungrier for some round wins and some points, I don't know who it is. And at that point, the track was really hot. Going down the track was tough. Antron Brown was able to run a 388, but really he was the only guy who got down the track second round. When that stuff is happening and you know there's a really good chance that this thing is going to light him up and I'm going to have to do my thing as a driver, does that change your perspective, and how do you get ready for that moment where you're going to have to pedal the car, and you did a good job running 5:33 at 289, basically getting to the wind light first.
Yeah, well, it's you go up there in the second round running Terry McMillan with, you know, when we pulled into the water box, I looked, they have a mellow yellow display up there that shows the track temperature, which I don't really discuss with the crew chief or anybody, track temperature. It's something that, you know, it's kind of not really information for me, but it is, I guess, a little bit useful because obviously the hotter the track, the more chances of smoking the tires. But I really felt that we made the proper adjustments going up for that second round, that it really wouldn't have been an issue. When I was backing up from the burnout, I had kind of noticed that it looked a little gooey up there. When you're looking at the track and you're backing up in your tracks and you can kind of see your front tire marks going through the rear tire marks, it kind of gave me a little bit of a feeling of how it was in Atlanta or in Houston 2 years ago, where it's just not a lot of traction up there. So when I backed up, it was kind of going through my mind about just be ready for anything. You don't know what's going to happen. You know, when it blows the tires off that quick on the starting line, it's very, very hard to catch it. And that's been something that Alan and Brian have been working with me about these last couple of years. The second race I ever raced for them, it blew the tires off early, and I about put the car on the wall. And Alan really sat me down after that race and explained a lot of things to me that I just didn't know before. So it's been something. It's been a little bit of a work in progress on getting me to get a little bit better, you know, pedaling the cars. You look at guys like Tony Schumacher and Doug Coletta, and I mean, they've been racing for so long and they're so good at it. They know how to pedal it in every condition and how the car's going to respond and how to get the thing to hook back up. And it's been a little bit of a work in progress with me, but, you know, the one thing that Alan's just kind of taught me is just patience. And I was probably a little bit too patient on that one, but fortunately, you know, I got up to hook back up and, you know, I hit the gas and immediately everything just goes quiet because it zings the motor up, smoking the tires. Well, I don't hear him next to me, so I figured we both just blew the tires off. So at that point, I was just pretty much focused on trying to get that car calmed down and settled down and then get back in the gas. And he got it to recover a little quicker than I did, and I seen him a couple car lengths ahead. And, you know, I got to hook back up and saw him smoking the tires. And fortunately, about half track is when I passed them, so kind of brought a little home feeling. Kind of felt like a little bit of a super comp race right there. You see someone go out in front of you a little bit and track them down, but it was it made me feel pretty good to be able to, you know, get a win for that Allen Abbey team and you know, try to just to keep extending those rounds and do my part as a driver.
Would you say that's the biggest departure from your past experience as a super comp racer, the fact that you might run into that, having to pedal the car? Because I can't think of anything that would prepare you for that. Of course, racing in super comp, a point I like to make to the fans that are out there is it's a great training class to make your brain quicker and make you able to make quick decisions rapidly in a tough situation. But the idea of having to pedal a car, control 10,000 horsepower, get it back to the ground in fractions of a second that result in wins and losses, I don't see anything training you for that.
No, that's exactly it. And that's exactly what I was going to say is, I mean, you can drive any car you want in the world, but there's nothing that can prepare you to drive one of these cars and all the different feelings that you get. It's the hard thing about pedaling a car and getting used to that is when you go testing and it smokes tires, you lift. When you qualify, it smokes tires, you lift. So the only time you're ever learning on how to pedal a car is during these high pressure situations on Sunday when you have to perform in front of your fans and your sponsors and everybody. So while you're learning and you're making mistakes or you're going throughout all your learning processes, I mean, you're doing it in all these high pressure situations. So that's that's the hardest thing, is not only to mind over matter of get through these high pressure situations, but to learn how to pedal a car, how to control 10,000 horsepower on a 130 degree racetrack, to get them, you know, and it's all these things are going through your mind of, well, the last time when I pedaled the car and it went sideways, or I couldn't get it to do this or do that, and then you're trying to change it, and you know, it's tough. And my hardest thing is I'm just too aggressive on the pedal. And, you know, I mean, I guess it's just from racing super comp and, you know, trying to mash down that gas pedal as quickly as I can to cut the best light possible. Well, I mean, you got everything in you to hit that pedal as quick as you can to cut a good light, and then it blows the tires off. Well, now you got to sit there for a half a second, let the car calm down, and roll back into the throttle. So, you know, and you're doing all this stuff in the matter of like a half a second. And just trying to, and the hardest thing as a driver is to see somebody driving away from you and to sit there for a half a second, which seems like an eternity in the car, but to sit there and be patient and let your car calm down and not get distracted by the fact this, I mean, you're only racing to 1,000 feet and this guy's already three car lengths ahead of you.
Wow, very, very exciting description there, and I think fans love the pedal fests, in my opinion. A great race, of course. We want to see 70s up on the board, side by side, a thou apart. But those pedal fest races, everybody gets into it, and there's even a little more time to enjoy the drama. You mentioned Terry was out in front of you. All the Langdon fans, their hearts were in their throats at that moment.
Mine was, too. Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have some races where we go to, like Reading or Pomona, when you can throw down those low 370 runs. But then, you know, it's pretty neat to go to some tracks, too, where you're going up there and you have no idea what to expect. You know, you kind of in the beginning of the year when the track's good, you just kind of get into a robot routine as a driver where, okay, do this the same thing every time. The car's going to go down the track. It's going to do this. It's going to do that. Well, when you get to these summer track races, you have no idea what it's going to do. I mean, is it going to pull the front end up? Is it going to wash out? Is it going to blow the tires off? Is it going to drive out of the groove? And it's a little bit harder to control them on the summer months, and also to try to get them to recover. It's a little bit easier to get them to recover through tire shake or tire smoke on a, you know, sub 100 degree track. But when you're getting up in the 120, 130 degree tracks, there's a little bit more of an art to getting these cars to recover.
Well, we're going to see that over the next couple of weeks. In the semis, you ran Bob Vandegrift, and he red-lighted, left a bunch early. And was it a long tree? I think I recall you saying that the tree was really long in the semifinal round.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, we've all been bitten by it. It's just, it's the nature of the beast. Is NHRA placed in a thing where it's kind of like a random tree, and there's sometimes where it'll throw you a quick tree, and there's sometimes it'll throw you a long tree, and that was probably the most extreme case of the long tree. You know, Bob and I, we always raise heads up with one another. You know, there's no games up there. We both go in as shallow as possible. So if anybody would have seen the race, you would have seen that we had both were flickering the stage bulb, and I don't know if maybe just from both of the bulbs kind of flickering, if it just held the tree a little bit longer or anything like that, but whatever it may be, it was a long tree, and I felt myself kind of flinching a couple times to the fact that, you know, it was, I haven't red-lighted in quite a while, but that was probably the closest I've been to feeling my foot go down before the tree came on.
Explain that to the listeners, Sean, because that happens in Supercomp as well, where you're not supposed to go, but your body just goes, and you can't control it.
And that's the hardest thing to explain is, I guess the best way to explain it is do something 100 times in a row, the same thing. You just, you get in this repetitious mode of, you know, you go in and stage, there's that little pause, the tree is on. Well, you start doing the same thing every single time, and then all of a sudden you kind of get in this little mode. Well, I mean, a human reaction is just over a tenth of a second. So if you're talking, they hold the tree from 5/10 of a second to, or I'm not really sure what the gap is. I think there's like a 5/10 from gap from a long tree to a short tree, but human reaction is 1/10 of a second. Now you're talking there's a half a second of breakup in there. Well, you're sitting in the car. I mean, you're trying to get every thousandth of a second you can out of the tree, and you're tensed, and your foot's, I mean, I've left off of a photographer flash before, just because you're looking for any type of light possible. I mean, you're on the edge of your seat ready to go. And there's just some times where your body just says go, and your mind's still not there. And you know when you do it and just mentally you tell yourself, like, what the heck did I just do? Your body was just ready to go. There's no explaining it.
It is one of the things about drag racing that I wish every fan could feel, that sensation where you know your brain is saying hold back and your body already went. In the final round, you got Doug Coletta. Wow, 7 final rounds for that team. They have been the dominant team. They are the points leader. They've got 1 win in those 7 finals, though, and you guys were able to get down the track with a 3.902 at 3.16, a solid run, low or second to lowest ET of the day for you, but able to bring it back together in the final round and win the race.
Yeah, and that was a, running Doug in the final. He's obviously got the hottest car on the tour right now. And I was a little intimidated running him because, you know, they have the best car out there right now, and they have a, great tuner with Jim Oberhofer. And, you know, running on a hot track, he can pedal a car, and, you know, we really didn't have a great car all day. We'd kind of been smoking the tires and been back and forth in different lanes and wasn't really getting lane choices, but we were just making things work. And, which is kind of weird because the last couple races, we had a great car and we really felt like we had a chance to win. And we were very disappointed leaving on Sunday because we basically thought as a team, like, hey, this was our race to win. We kind of gave that away. And then on Sunday, I wasn't really cutting as good of lights as I normally do, where I like to be in the 050 range, but I was in the 060s, 070s range, and we never really had a car that set low ET. We just had a car that was just making it down the track when it needed to, and we had the luck when we needed it. And it's just funny how racing works sometimes. There's times when you have the dominant car and you can't do anything right on Sunday, but then there's times when you just show up on Sunday and everything will fall into place. And thankfully everything fell into place because there's a lot of good things that came out of that. So got into that Traxxas shootout and got that first win of the year for the team and, for everyone that's been helping us with Toyota and Redline Oil and all of our sponsors that have stuck with us. And, they're all supporting us and, they're excited about it. So it's good to, have everyone that's following us kind of getting excited again, and hey, a couple more races, and then we're going to start the countdown, and everybody's ready for that countdown.
Oh, we are ready too, but we want to enjoy a couple more races between now and then. Of course, Epping coming up. Sean, how's life as champion? What is different about showing up to the racetrack as the reigning Mellow Yellow Series champion? I know there was a show a couple of months back, Rise of the Machines, that really went very in detail about your final race at Pomona last year, you versus Antron, showing the inner workings and aspects of the Top Fuel dragsters over there. And I haven't spoken with you about it since. I wanted to bring it back up because I thought it was not only a great exposure for the machines, but great exposure for you and Antron as driver personalities. What is different about this year showing up to the tracks, your interaction with fans, your interactions with other drivers since you won this championship?
Well, I mean, obviously we've gotten a lot more media attention, being champion, which has been great. I mean, I don't look at anything different. I'm still same guy that just loves going to the racetrack, and I don't look at anything different. I just see another opportunity this year to keep going at it and keep working hard and trying to get another Mellow Yellow Top Fuel World Championship. I think we've gotten a couple more followers. We've gotten a couple more fans and a little bit more media attention and getting a little bit more exposure for our team and for you know, Sheikh Khaled and the country of Qatar. And so I think it was, you know, it's pretty neat to be able to do a TV show like that, not only to show what our race cars do, but to show the sport to an average household. And not a, the average household doesn't always understand how our sport works. You know, a lot of people, if I meet them, you know, at a golf course or at a restaurant or something, and they start asking questions, and it's like, oh, the long skinny things with the parachutes that go really fast.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they understand that, but I think with having a TV show like that, it can show a little bit more in depth, but be able to explain it to an average household to where they can actually understand it a little bit more and actually understand, you know, what these machines go through and what it takes to run something like this. And but also, you know, show a pretty good story between the battle between, you know, our team and Antoine Brown's team at the end of last year, and it coming down to the last race and us racing each other every single qualifying run and just battling back and forth, and, you know, us both making great runs and number one and number two qualifier. And it was a really neat story, and it turned out really good, and I was very proud to be a part of that. You know, I just hopefully NHRA can take a little bit of initiative off of that and start working with more TV shows on trying to, you know, keep continuing to progress our sport and progress the NHRA to not only just to the people that know NHRA, but to the average households and, you know, bring more fans to the racetrack. That's the biggest thing, is watching our sport on TV doesn't do it justice. You gotta be at the racetrack. You gotta feel the power and smell it and breathe it and hear it. I think just doing more things like that will eventually, you know, drive more people to the racetrack.
I agree 100%. And the long, skinny cars with parachutes that go really fast. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that when referring to drag racing. That's exactly what they say. Speaking of getting a lot of people to the racetrack, headed to Epping this weekend for the second time ever in the NHRA Mellow Yellow Series. Last time out, the place was packed. If each of those people bring a friend, I have no idea how crowded it's going to be, but I think it's going to be pretty awesome, pretty exciting going back to that place.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely excited. We had a great time there last year. You know, the results were there. We made it to the final round, so that's always good. But the fans, man, these guys are crazy, and we love it. And they show up, and there's a lot of tracks that you go to where the fans appreciate what you do and appreciate you coming. But these guys, I mean, they were genuine about it. They really were, hey, thank you for coming. We've been waiting a long time to see you guys. We want a race up here in that thing. You know, we want to support it. So they were excited about it. And like you said, if every person that showed up last year brought a friend, I don't know where they're going to put them, but I know they'll pack it in there and you know, we'll definitely put a good show on for them.
I am looking forward to it. Doing anything special in the Boston media market surrounding the race?
No, I think we're, we don't really have too much going on. I'll be getting in on Thursday and going to the hotel and going to watch a baseball game over there in Manchester. And so just go and enjoy it, enjoy the win, and go hang out with the guys and go watch a little bit of baseball before we go back to racing.
There you go. Yeah, when I get in, I check to see if the Red Sox are on the road. It looks like I was going to try to hit Fenway, but they're a little bit early. Compared to my travel schedule, a little bit of a bummer. I want to hit Fenway as one of my ballparks, but not working out for us this time. But Sean, great job as usual. Thank you so much for coming on WFO. Your first of 2014. I know it won't be your last, though. Congratulations.
I appreciate it, Joe. Thank you very much.
Sean Langdon with us here on WFO Radio, and that is exactly the kind of conversation, the reason WFO Radio exists. Going in depth behind the scenes in a relaxed situation. They're not at the track and can go round by round what happened, why it happened, what they were thinking about, so that we, the fans, can learn about what the drivers go through. I think it is the greatest obstacle in the way of drag racing becoming a much more popular sport, is that there are so many minute details that make the difference between winning and losing. that maybe we don't get to talk about because each run is 4 seconds and so exciting. We're talking about cars going up in smoke and going sideways as opposed to how the driver is managing that chaotic situation. Thanks to Sean for coming on and sharing it with us here on WFO Radio. We've got more to come. We've got Tommy Johnson Jr. going to join us, going to talk about his long road back to the winner's circle, and he gets back on Father's Day at the track where he won his first alcohol race. How cool is that? We'll speak with TJ coming up in a little bit. If you're a fan of Tommy Johnson Jr., get on the Twitter machine and let all your friends know. Tweet, retweet, repeat all the tweets with Tommy Johnson Jr. It's going to be awesome. Also on the show, we're going to catch up with Erica Enders Stevens. Erica, wow, what a crowd favorite out there. They were going wild at the winner's circle. You know, I always tell everyone, hey, if I'm going to be at the race, come down to the winner's circle. There is a good chance I will be hosting the winner's circle celebration, as I was at the Ford Thunder Valley Nationals. And it was so easy, because all I had to do was say, Erica Enders Stevens, and everyone went crazy. And I wanted to just say it over and over again, because they were going nuts. It was a great time. It was a lot of fun. And we had a lot of WFO listeners out there. We'll be speaking with Erica on this show. 99th and 101st win by a female driver in the professional classes. Go to Erica Enders Stevens. Also on the show, Pete Farber. First pro-modified NHRA win, and talk about a team, just as luck would have it. I spoke with Pete down at Palm Beach when they were testing. I spoke with Pete a couple of times throughout the year, and he breaks through and wins his first NHRA race at the Ford Thunder Valley Nationals. Huge win. We're going to talk about the long road to it and what it took to get to the winner's circle in the NHRA and Pro Modified. Very, very cool. Pete Farber will be on this show. So stick around, get ready. But first, I want to tell you about Rodax Coffee and Barbecue Grills. You got to go on the web. That's the best way to do it. You can either go to WFOradio.com and click the banner ad, or go to RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. They do roasted coffee, their own custom blends, like Nitro Fuel, which I'm drinking every morning, or Bang the Blower, which I actually got unground so I can grind it up, and I'm really into the coffee thing, which a lot of people are. That's how we start off the day. But also, the hot sauces and the barbecue rubs. It's summertime. You're going to be grilling. You want to try something new. Of course, you could go to the supermarket and get the same thing you get every week, every time. Or you could try something new. Who is a drag racer, a drag racing fan, been doing it since 1976, also supporting the WFO radio show, RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. Or you can pick up the phone. You could do it old school and call 817-924-6821. Say, hey, Marvin, send me something good. They've got special wood for smoking when you do the barbecuing stuff in the afternoon. You got to get on the website, RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com, to find out all the cool things. I'm enjoying the hot sauces, especially with my breakfast, with my lunch, on all meals. What a great condiment. Check it out at RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com or call them 817-924-6821. So many good things to try. Call Marvin, say, hey, Marvin, ship me out something. It'll show up, and next thing you know, you'll have something good for your summer barbecues. That's RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. We'll be back with Tommy Johnson Jr. when we return right here on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Whether you're a bracket racer who wants to get better or a thrill seeker looking to cross it off your bucket list, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School can put you on the right track. Don't believe me? Tell him, Frank.
No matter how little or how much experience you have, we've got a program for you. So if driving a dragster is on your bucket list, there's no better time than now. And if you'd like to be a pro, well, here's the newest funny car champ, Jack Beckman.
Hey, this is Jack Beckman. Long before I was Fast Jack, I was a bracket racer who went to the Frank Hawley School. The time I spent there was some of the most exciting, intense, and fulfilling moments ever in a race car. I feel the curriculum Frank developed greatly helped me win not only the Super Comp, but also the NHRA Nitro Funny Car Championship. Frank put me on the right track. What are you waiting for?
Call them at 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223. 480-7223 or visit frankhawley.com.
Get fired up on the WFO line.
WFO, Joe.
954-889-6796.
It's just been an absolute joy to be a drag racing fan.
Go wide open, and your call may be used on the show.
Or preface by saying I'm not a Kurt Busch fan or apologist.
I don't know where Greg Anderson's ego is gone, but I know one person that's going to be a big-time villain in pro stock.
That's 954-889-6796. That phone line is always WFO.
Hey, this is Joe Costello, and we'll be back to the show in a second. But first, I want to tell you about CompetitionPlus.com. There's a reason CompetitionPlus.com is the leader among drag racing electronic magazines. Their trained staff is always on alert and always asking the tough questions. The end result is hard-hitting drag racing journalism with up-to-the-minute reporting. For over a decade, CompetitionPlus.com has been a pioneer as drag racing's go-to source for the latest in news, race coverage, and high-quality photography. Their trained staff thrives on getting the inside stories, and their columnists study their topics before they hit their first keystroke. When it comes to covering the races, they leave you feeling as if you've actually been to the race. CompetitionPlus.com is an honest-to-goodness, free drag racing magazine, published by the most passionate of drag racing fans, who just happen to be journalists. Don't wonder what's going on in the drag racing world. Be in the know daily. Log on to CompetitionPlus.com.
WFO Radio is 300 miles per hour of fire-burning nitromethane thunder.
If you want to be called the champ, you got to beat me, because we fight for championships. We don't give them away.
WFORadio.com. Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
The Ford Thunder Valley Nationals, presented by the Tri-Cities area Ford dealers at Bristol Dragway. What a race. A lot of WFO listeners in the house. It was Father's Day weekend. Boy, did we have a great time. And first-time winners of 2014, first time in a long time for some racers. Let's get into it with Funny Car. He joins us now. He's been on the shows many times since the time he was last a winner. But now he is back as a winner. Joining us now, Tommy Johnson Jr. TJ, welcome back to WFO.
Great to be on, Joe.
I have had you on the show many, many times over the course of just different aspects of your career. You were starting a business. You were you're doing TV stuff, getting opportunities then after tests. Now you are back as a winner. The long road back is complete. Congratulations.
I appreciate it, Joe. Yeah, this is the reason I wanted to be on the show. I wanted to be on here for this reason, but I appreciate you having me on over the years and just supporting me and especially everybody in drag racing that helped me get back to driving full time and getting back to where I wanted to be and doing whatever it took to do that, and all the people that helped me along the way. And it was kind of a payoff, I guess, Sunday when we were able to put the Make-A-Wish car in the winner's circle. That was a thank you to everybody that supported me along the way.
It was one of those things that I think a lot of NHRA fans had to scratch their heads, because how could it be that a driver as qualified as yourself, as dedicated as yourself, as media savvy and friendly as yourself, could possibly be on the sidelines? And I think I can tell you that I always thought, if a guy like Tommy can't get hired, can't get a ride, can't find a ride, something is wrong with the sport. Because it makes no sense. I know a lot of people have said that to me, frankly. Like, what's going on when really good drivers who have won races, who have represented for the likes of Don Prudhomme and others, cannot figure out, can't get hired, what's up? And the fact that you kept your nose to the grindstone, you did things that a lot of other racers wouldn't have wanted to do, got the gig, won the race, that makes a lot of things right in the NHRA world, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough in racing, you know. I mean, with the economy the way it was, and it's frustrating. Let me tell you, as a driver, you know, knowing you can do this but not being able to have the opportunity to do it is very frustrating. But, you know, it's how it is. You know, if you don't have sponsorship and you can't bring some money to the table, the opportunities aren't going to be there as quick as they are if they want, you know, a team has a sponsor and wants to hire you for your talent alone. And I realized it. I didn't like it. Didn't particularly care for it, but I knew how it was. And the only way I knew how to get back, I didn't have the money to buy the seat, and it was just work hard and wait for the opportunity and try to outwork others. You know, my asset I had was the talent behind the wheel and the hard work, you know, ethic. And that paid off eventually. There was many, many days along the way. I didn't know if it was going to pay off, but very thankful it did, and very thankful that you know, Don Schumacher and Terry Chandler, they gave me the opportunity. They recognized the hard work and the effort and the desire to how bad I wanted to do this. And Terry was nice enough when she stepped up, sponsored the car this year. They were going to pick a driver based on who they wanted to drive the car, not who had money to bring to the table. And just very thankful she gave me that opportunity.
Such a great situation. And I want to get into the whole Make-A-Wish Foundation and Terry and Don and all that went on. You're the first DSR funny car to win in 2014. That's kind of cool. But was there ever a time, Tommy, where you thought, I'm out, I'm done, I'm finished? Showing up at the track every weekend, doing track prep specialist position. You're a funny car driver. You've won Wally's. And to be there in front of everybody, gutting it out, it spoke volumes, at least to me. But was there a time where you thought, you know what, I don't know if I'm going to keep doing this?
Yeah, there was lots of days along the way that you thought, man, I don't know if this is ever going to happen. Maybe I just need to go do something different. You know, it's not going to happen. And I love drag racing way too much to do that. And there was days that I was very close to that, and I just said, well, all right, I'll go again. I'll go another weekend. I tell a lot of people I either wanted to do it really bad or I was really stupid, and I must have been a little bit of both because I just kept coming back and didn't want. You know, you can't let them forget you. You know, our sport is a very fast-paced sport. They forget people in a hurry if you're not out there in front of them every week. And that's why I just kept showing up and making sure people remembered me and how bad I wanted to do this. And just, you know, it's a lot of support, not only from, you know, the Schumacher camp or, you know, other people, but people in the pits, just a lot of people. These are all my friends. You know, this is where I grew up, and this is, everybody in drag racing is a very good and close friend of mine, and just a lot of supporters. There's things that people did for me along the way that nobody knows about, and just little things that they may not even think was a big deal, but to me was a big deal. And you know, past crew chiefs and guys I've worked with on other teams that would help me out along the way, or I need something, or you know, just little favors here and there. And so this win was it was big. It was really big for a lot of reasons, and personally, it was a big win for me to just. It's something I do to help pay back, you know, a little bit and saying thanks for having faith in me.
Absolutely, and I really think that this win does speak volumes and kind of put a bookend or an end mark on that chapter in your career, because now you are back, you are a winner, and boy, is it hard to win out there. Let's talk about the win. You were the number 5 qualifier. You had to run crews in the first round. You ran 4:14.7 on a very tricky racetrack. It was the hottest track of the year, not quite at first round time, but what a difficult first round to get through.
Yeah, I mean, we've raced in good conditions most of the season so far, and then come out Sunday and have a really hot racetrack and the hottest conditions we've seen all season long. And the team, the Make-A-Wish team, John Collins, you know, the crew chief on this car, getting his first shot at being a crew chief. And the story goes back to John and I grew up in the same town together, and first race he ever went to was with me in my Top Fuel car back in 99 and did bottom in. And I said, the thing that was cool was when this time, the final round, John turned the screw on the barrel valve instead of doing bottom in. And it's really neat to see him come a long ways and see him show his talents. I knew he had it the day he went with me the first race, and very cool for him and all the guys on the Make-A-Wish team. The crew has worked extremely hard because of all the problems we had in the last three races, you know, the fab shop at the building, putting mountain bodies for us and putting the front halves on this thing. And it's been a big team effort, but you made the understatement of the year how tough it is to win out here right now. The funny car class is so competitive. You know, we qualified really well, top half of the field, almost every race, and just couldn't get it done on Sunday. I mean, it's so tough. You have to have everything perfect on a Sunday. And John and the guys did it great on Sunday. I mean, to go out and run like we did in the heat and those conditions, and go out there and run steady. We never smoked tires all weekend, down the track every run, and he had a handle on it. You know, the guys serviced that thing, put it back together, and up we go, and run the same as what he thought we were going to run. So just a great team effort.
You had to take out the Cruiser, the most recent race winner on the tour, and then second round Robert Hight, who has been the most dominant single car over the course of this season, kind of running into trouble the past couple of weeks, but you were able to take him down with a 4:17.5. And then in the semis, you got to go up against your teammate, Matt Hagen, who Reinhardt's calling Hulk Hagen, and I think that's a very fitting nickname. I've been calling him the Beast. Regardless, the guy is awesome on the starting line, and you left first by a hundredth, 54 to a 64, and won with identical 420s on the board. You outpaced him by 6,000, but what a great race that was.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. Matt is really, really coming to his own in the driving. He is really tough, and Cruiser. I mean, Cruiser's always good in the lights, and Robert as well. I mean, you know, I kept thinking all day, this car's running great. Don't screw it up. You know, don't be the guy that screws this up. But a funny story is I ran Matt on Saturday in qualifying, and, you know, in qualifying, I concentrate on what's most important. You know, driving the car, I want to make sure I'm doing exactly what is most important at that time. And I ran a 4:12, and Matt ran a 17 in qualifying, and he beat me to the stripe. And they were razzing me a little bit about, you know, hey, he took the light. You know, what's the deal? And everybody gave me a bad time. I says, you remind me next time they pay money to take the finish line and qualify, and I'll pay attention. I says, tomorrow's when it counts. And everybody kind of laughed. Okay, yeah, you need to step up. And when I had Matt in the semi, I thought, okay, boys, it's for money today. Let's do this. And to be able to put a hundredth on him on the start line, it's a feather in your cap because you know how good he is. And be able to take the stripe when it counts is when what was most important. And it made me feel pretty good. The driver did his job, and that's what you're paid to do. So if you're not going to bring money to the table and they're paying you to drive the car, you better do your job, and I'm very happy to get that done. And, you know, Wilkie, he's no slouch either. That's the guy in the final that he's the guy that kind of shines when the tracks get hot. Wilkerson always seems to do really well in the summertime. When the tracks get a little tricky, he's the guy you got to look out for. So it was not an easy road all day long. You know, Cruz, Robert, Matt, and then Wilk in the final. It wasn't like we backed into it, for sure.
Not even close. You had a 64, a 60, a 54, and a 75 in terms of reaction time. Talk about getting ready for the final round. I know that the really great drivers and athletes are able to put all of the emotional stuff aside and somehow wall themselves off from what it would mean. But we stood beneath the tower. Your dad was there. I spoke with him for a few moments, and he rapid-fire rattled off your history at Bristol. First alcohol win, beat Bob Newberry when it was an eyesight track, set a record, then just different aspects of your career, winning on Father's Day. It would obviously mean so much. You were so close to completing this journey back to the winner's circle, but if you thought about it, it could take you out of your game potentially. How did you deal with all of that?
You know, it's been very easy to get out of the, you know, thinking about it too much and wanting it too bad. And I was really relaxed actually going into the final. It just, the performance of the car helped a lot with that. You know, knowing that you had a great car and not having to worry about, boy, I hope this thing makes it, hope we don't smoke the tire. I was pretty confident we're going to go down the racetrack. They had a very good handle on the tune up and try not to overthink the drive and just keep doing what I'm doing. And John Collins and I had a conversation in the lounge. He goes, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. You just keep doing what you're doing. I said, okay, that sounds like a plan. Make it all work out. And, you know, that's kind of what I focused on, was just keep doing what I'm doing. Whatever I'm doing today is working. And it's, you know, having good lights and just it's flowing. I'm just going to go up there and do the exact same thing. I didn't even think about losing the other lane. And mentally I pictured it. It wasn't a final to me. It was just another run, you know, and just go up there and do it again. Just go up and do it again. Just go up and do it again. That's what I kept thinking all day. And it would have been very easy, like you said, to get wrapped up in the how much it meant. And, you know, Father's Day, that's the third time I've won on Father's Day now. And if anything, that might have helped build my confidence a little bit, knowing that, hey, I've done this before on Father's Day. Let's go do it again. And it meant a lot. You know, to have my dad there, my two nephews, Gage and Zane, were there. My mom was there. My mom has never seen me win a race. She didn't get to go a lot back when I was in my early years of my career when I won some races because she stayed home and ran the family business while my dad and I went to the races. So she had never seen me win a race. So very special to have her there too as well on Father's Day. And the only person missing was my sister and her husband. So it was a really neat deal to have so many people there with me. And my mom was there when my sister won the NHRA race, but she'd never seen me win. So Glad that got to happen, Thunder.
There you go. Wow, there is a lot of extra stuff there. And what I really appreciate, not everybody gets to see it every round, or I really don't know exactly how much the ESPN coverage showed this kind of stuff, but you get pumped up after every round win, which I really like. It's a big deal to win a round against one of these other teams out there. So much effort going through. But at the end of the semis, you are almost as fired up as you were when you won it, because you obviously know how much effort is going into this.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, that had a lot to do with how tough Hagen was. I knew how tough he was, you know, and to beat those guys, and they're your teammates, so that, you know, what they're going to run. I mean, you have a pretty good idea of what they're doing, and he's doing a great job in that car, and, you know, the world champ, you know, past world champion, first, second, and third round, that's a pretty big hill to climb, and to be able to take those guys out, get to the final, when you get to the final, you've done a great job. You want to cap it off, but you know how big a deal it is to get to the final one of these races, and I do. I get fired up every run. It's funny that I was pretty calm. I was calm all day on Sunday. I usually get pretty fired up because I mean, there's nothing better than winning. Let me tell you, when you see that win light come on the guardrail, it's pretty easy to get fired up. But I saw it all day Sunday and just like, cool. All right, let's do it again. Let's get around. And you know, you get to the you come out of the car, and that's kind of when it hits you right on. We're good. You know, there's people there and excitement. It started to get me a little pumped up, but for me, that's about as calm as I get on race day on Sundays. That was pretty smooth.
The Mellow Yellow Express ride up to the winner's circle. What was that like for you? Just kind of soaking it in. Whenever we talk with drivers who win big, big things, whether it be big like the U.S. Nationals, big like the Indy 500, or big personally like this one is to you, winning the 4th Thunder Valley Nationals on Father's Day, they always say it takes a while to sink in the fact that mission accomplished, you were able to get the job done. Has that sunk in that you are back, you completed a personal mission? Was it sinking in? And what was that emotional ride like? Just kind of soaking in the details that you and your guys were able to accomplish this. Terry Chandler putting together this team, Make-A-Wish, just so many positive things flowing out of this victory.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. You know, the team showed up at the top end and we celebrated, and Don came down, Terry came down, and my dad was there, and everybody came to the top end to see me. And then there was a little bit of time to reflect for myself as well, because they took the car and we're headed back to the winner's circle, and we were waiting on Sean Langley to get there, and kind of went over and just sat by myself in the back of the Meliola vehicle there, and just kind of had about 5-10 minutes to just sit there by myself and kind of soak it in. It was kind of a neat experience to be able to, you know, just think about things. And nobody else was around. Nobody else was there with me. Just, you know, a couple of people were standing around, but I was sitting there doing my own thing and just kind of thinking about stuff and how much this meant to finally put a period on it, you know, for such a long drought, not being able to, drive one of these cars and knowing how bad you wanted to do it. And neat to celebrate with everybody at the top end, and then really kind of a special moment there to just sit by myself for a little bit and soak it all in before the winner's circle activities.
With the victory, you are now third in the points standings, which has me immediately thinking this team's got a lot of potential for even bigger accomplishments. You are in the right position at the right time. As much as the funny car class is very, very competitive and anything can happen, you want to be in the top couple of points positions so that you have some latitude to try some things, or you don't have to worry about making the field. It's looking like you are on the top. You've qualified for the Traxxas shootout. Those are all big things that come along with this win.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and it just goes back to show how good this team is. You know, last year, all these guys were here last year with Johnny Gray and they did a great job, won 4 races and almost felt like, man, I don't want to let them down. They won 4 races last year. We need to win some races here. I don't want to be the guy that, you know, comes on board and we don't win anything. So it shows that, you know, how good this team is. And to step in here and we kind of pick them back up now. And John's doing a great job. The guys haven't missed a beat. They're right there just like they were last year. And you know, it's a very steady team. And we've gone rounds. We haven't really, you know, we hadn't won yet, but we were very competitive and we've gone rounds. I think we've only went out first round, you know, 2 or 3 times and just kind of second round, a couple of semis, just being steady. And I think that's what it takes to, put yourself in the hunt when it gets down to the end of the season, you know, be in the countdown and very neat to get that Traxxas shootout. I was, you know, watching that for the past couple of years going, well, that'd be cool to be in that and put our name on the board there for that. That's a really special thing. I'm, looking looking forward to that. I only live 3 miles from the track here in Indy, so it's going to be a great weekend, be able to be involved with the Traxxas Shootout and have be a part of that. And you got to focus on bigger things now. I mean, we've got our win. You can't dwell on that. You want to enjoy it this week and have fun with it. But the bigger picture is we want to continue to do this, and we need to go to Epping this weekend and be competitive and try to win another one and just keep ourselves going to keep the momentum flowing. And the big picture is the championship. So you got to focus on that. We know we can do it now. So you just have to concentrate on being able to do that every weekend.
There you have it. Tommy, it has been great watching you through this process. It has really been a model for a lot of people. Hopefully, and people are invited to go back into the WFO archive and listen to the progress of Tommy Johnson through just many different things that you were doing, all with the focus of getting back on the track. You got back on the track. You won a Mellow Yellow Series event. Congratulations. Thanks for sharing the whole experience, the highs and lows and in between, with our audience. I think it was very cool, and I'm quite sure this won't be the last time we speak with you here in 2014. Congratulations.
Well, I hope not, Joe. I tell you what, it was a big smile on my face, but you know, we have all those Make-A-Wish kids out there on Saturdays, and to be able to see them smile and having a good time with all the struggles they're going through, it means a lot more now. You know, a win like this means a lot more. So I don't want this to be the last one. I want to be able to make those kids smile every Saturday when we have them out, and I don't mind smiling a little bit in the winner's circle on Sunday.
That was a great moment, and it is a great thing you guys are doing with that team. Terry Chandler, Don Schumacher, now a legend of Thunder Valley, and you get to hoist a Wally in celebration of it all. Tommy, thank you so much. We'll see you in a couple days.
Sounds good, Joe. Thanks.
There he goes, Tommy Johnson Jr. with us here on WFO Radio, and I highly recommend going back into the archive and just searching for all the Tommy Johnson Jr. interviews. That's one thing that I really love about the WFOradio.com website, is that you can go back into the archive or the interview archive and really find moments of NHRA drag racing history. You can find a myriad of moments. You look it up, you figure out, I want to go back, and dating back to the start of WFO Radio in 2009, there were a lot of big moments that happened between 2009 and now, that you can hear the driver, what they thought, the emotions of the moment, how they sounded, how they dealt with things. Not just text on a page or a photograph. If a photograph is worth 1,000 words and a video is worth 1,000,000 words, what is an in-depth interview where you can hear the person telling for themselves? Tommy's whole transition is pretty much recorded on WFO Radio. And now that transition is capped with a victory. How cool is that? Tommy Johnson Jr. joining us here on WFO Radio. Coming up, we've got Erica Ender-Stevens and Pete Farber. We're going to talk to the winners from the Ford Thunder Valley Nationals. I just want to take a second to thank the staff of Bristol Dragway. I love going to that facility because they are so friendly. Brandon Cross and Lindsey Wilson and everybody, Jerry Coleman, everybody who was involved from the facility, from the person and the staging lanes, to the people holding the doors open, to the traffic people, just so friendly. They really have the customer service thing down. They understand at the Bruton Smith facilities that customer service is a big part of the experience, and I just had a great time there. Of course, we were working, running around in the heat, but they made it very, very pleasant, pleasurable. Big thanks to them, everyone at Bristol Dragway. It was awesome. And all the WFO Radio listeners that were there, not just from the NHRA Nitro show, but from the Ignition show. A lot of NASCAR fans came out and hung out with WFO Radio. It was a great time. Of course, we'll be up there in Epping this week, and looking forward to meeting fans from the Baston area, up there in the Northeast, New England, with the New England Nationals. Looking forward to it. All right, when we come back, Erica Ender-Stevens going to join us. Then Pete Farber will bring us home right here on this edition of WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
Redline Synthetic Oil has been building the world's finest motor oil, gear oil, and additives, like our popular water wetter, for over 30 years. Think we're just for racers? Think again. Redline has the multi-grade viscosity available for your domestic, European, or Japanese vehicle. From 0W20 to 5W30, even 10W60, Redline motor oils are specifically designed to exceed the factory's demands, giving you longer drain intervals at lower oil temperatures. Is your off-the-shelf motor oil missing the zinc you need to protect your camshaft? Every bottle of Redline motor oil has more than enough zinc to suit your engine's needs. The same ester-based stocks found in Redline motor oil are also in our gear oils for manual transmissions and differentials. Known around the globe as the best in protection, regardless of price. Check us out at redlineoil.com to find a dealer or even buy online. Racing technology engineered for the street. That's Redline Oil.
Android. WFO Radio is now available on Android.
You know, I get goosebumps just thinking of what you're saying.
You get the same award-winning motorsports entertainment that iPhone users have downloaded over 25,000 times.
You know, sometimes you just got to pinch yourself.
They couldn't make this happen.
Ignition. NHRA Nitro. NASCAR coverage. Video. Push notifications. The WFO Radio NASCAR Tailgate Party Pick Show and more.
It's a whole different game.
The WFO Radio app is a must for any racing fan. The ultimate racing show. Sports radio for racing fans. It's in your pocket right now.
I'm going to scream.
Search WFO Radio and download it now.
I like it. It's exciting for me, and I know it's exciting for the fans.
Download it now. Now.
Hey, everybody. The summer is here, and that means it's time to grill. Remember just a couple of months ago when you were freezing and you were thinking, I can't wait until I can get out there and grill something? Well, now you can, and if you're going to do it, you got to do it with the most awesome barbecue rubs going. Check out RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. Marvin Rodak, a big NHRA fan and WFO radio listener, has award-winning spice rubs that you can order online or by phone. Go to RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com, 817-924-6821. I just tried two new hot sauces that he's got going. The perfect condiment if you're grilling out this summer. Also, coffee in the morning. Marvin roasts his own blends. You got to try them out. RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. Or if you want to kick it old school, pick up the phone, dial 817-924-6821. Say, hey, Marvin, I heard about you on WFO. I want you to send me some coffee and barbecue rub, maybe some hot sauce, and it'll show up in the mail. That's 817-924-6821 for RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com.
WFO Radio NHRA Nitro. WFO Radio. Now, back to WFO Radio.
Boy, this has been a really great show with the Ford Thunder Valley Nationals winners, and you can get used to these winners' editions because we're headed to Epping this weekend, then Chicago, then Norwalk, and you're going to hear winners on WFO Radio for the next couple of weeks. Time to move into Pro Stock, a very popular win. In the winner's circle stage, all I had to do was say, Erica Ender-Stevens, and they all went crazy. Well, here she is, Erica Ender-Stevens on WFO. Erica, congratulations. Welcome back.
Thank you, Joe. How you doing?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Pretty good.
Yeah, what's new in your world?
Not a lot. Just hit the gym this morning and try to catch up on everything while I'm home for 2 days. You know, lovely dentist appointment and fun things of that nature.
Fun stuff. Fun things out there in the world.
Oh, yeah.
The dentist. They didn't drill on you, did they?
No, I hate the dang dentist. But everything was good, so that's good.
That is very good. See, I'll message all you kids out there. Take care of your teeth. Now,
yes.
Erica, this was a very big win for you. You have come very close at Thunder Valley a few times, and to break through, you have a big fan base there. They represented in the winner's circle big time.
They really did. It was such a cool winner's circle for me. I mean, driver intros was the same as well. It was just really slam-packed down there on the starting line. So the fans in Bristol have been tremendous, and yeah, that was our third final round appearance in the last 4 years. So, you know, I guess Bristol's kind of a lucky track for me in a sense. And yesterday it seemed to be really lucky. We finally sealed the deal and got it done. And just really excited for my entire Elite Motorsports team.
Now, you've had the quickest hot rod, or one of the quickest hot rods on the grounds for a long time, and something that is developing that I think is crazy is this number one qualifying jinx. Can we call it that? But nobody
yes,
has won from the number one spot yet. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I joked with AJ in Houston. I mean, I wanted to be on the pole in my hometown, but I told him, I was like, you can have it. I don't want it. So, it's just one of those deals. You know, I've not had a lot of number one qualifiers, probably 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there, and I've only won from the pole one time, and that was in Brainerd. So, I'm out on the number one deal, except for that K&N bonus. That's a little nice, but other than that, I'm out.
Unbelievable how that happens. I think it just shows how competitive this class is that even for the number one qualifier, it's a tough road.
Yeah, it absolutely is, and it just goes, you know, that's why we race on Sunday. It just goes to show that, you know, you don't always just win on paper. I mean, Jeggy had the fastest hot rod there, and so did Shane Gray, but on Sunday it was Jeg, and, you know, I was really fortunate enough that he went red, and it stinks for him, but a lucky break for us, and that's kind of what our team needed.
First round, you had to go up against Larry Morgan. After qualifying third, and Larry is always tough, but you were able to get around him. And then second round, and in the semis, you had to run up against those two that have just dominated this class for the past decade, Greg and Jeg. And they both went red by a couple of thou to you. What do you think that says, if anything, about the way they view you and your team and the combination that you guys got going right now?
Well, I guess, I mean, they're both tremendous drivers. I mean, two of the best in the entire class and in the history of the sport. It's just, it's crazy lining up to them. But I guess it just says that, you know, they got to go up there and take a shot at it because, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'm good on the tree, which I wasn't yesterday. But, and then we always have a fast race car, Rick and Ricky Jones. And, you know, my team owner, Richard Freeman, have really worked hard on this program. And the guys back at the engine shop, Nick Perry and Jake Harrison, they give us awesome horsepower. So, I guess it just says that they're taking a shot at it because we are the faster car, and sometimes that happens. It's a sucky deal, but it happens.
Final round, you go up against Jonathan. It's the guy's birthday, Erica. Come on.
I didn't know that, but it wouldn't have changed anything for me, for my mindset, but I didn't know it was his birthday. And, you know, he was kind enough to come down to the winner's circle and, you know, shake my hand and congratulate me. And, I mean, what a great rookie season for him. I mean, he's been running really well, and to have a final round appearance this early on, I mean, gosh, it took me a long time to get there, and really happy for him. He's a great guy.
Yeah, the whole Gray family, really nice people, and they joined us in the track walk, and it was a great time. But let me ask you about this. Obviously, you win the race, you hoist the Wally, it's tremendous. And then I see on the front page of the Bristol newspaper, or maybe it was Kingsport, one of the big papers there they give out in the hotel, Enders makes history, becomes first female to win at Bristol. So funny that that wasn't even in my thought process. I wasn't even thinking about that, but the paper recognizes the moment of history. Pro stock. How about that?
Wow. I didn't know that because I did a Bristol TV show after the win on Sunday, and they told me I was the 10th woman to win there, so I don't know what's going on, but
weird.
I guess that's pretty cool.
Well, I remember thinking that Melanie had won there. Maybe they meant in pro stock, or I'll have to go back and look. But, yeah, that was on the paper and right on the front page, too, which I thought was pretty big.
Well, that's awesome. I'll have to find somebody. Maybe Brutus can get me a copy from over there. But, yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, it's a big honor to be able to do that in pro stock for the females out there. But we were able to get the 99th win and the 101st win, so we missed the big milestone win, but that's all right. We bookended it, and I couldn't be more proud of my team. They're so great. They're just wonderful people, and they support me and take my back and encourage me, and they're awesome.
The fact that you're back in the winner's circle, I think, is tremendous and allows me to ask you about when things weren't going quite as well. Past couple of races, you had really quick race cars, qualified well, and just being beaten on the track. And I want to know what you think about carrying this new situation where you have the dominant car, you have a team that is as good as or better than everyone else out there, and there's got to be extra pressure associated with that that you maybe haven't felt in the past, being there as the person with the car to beat, and if you lose, there's some expectations that go along with it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and You know, I've never been in this position in my pro stock career. I've never led the points until this year. I've never had a car capable of winning every race and the championship. I've never had a team like I have. So it's all kind of uncharted territory for me. And I really pride myself on my driving. I feel like I perform well under pressure. I was telling my team owner this past weekend, like Vegas, I don't think it gets, you don't get more pressure than that. There's $100,000 on the line. I mean, you know how hard it is to win run rates and then to go out and have to win two in one weekend. It was a dream weekend, and, you know, I performed great. My team performed great, again, at Houston with all the added pressure of being at home. So I don't think it's the pressure, because I don't feel like anything's changed, but maybe it's a different mindset. I don't go up there any differently. I go up there and give it 150% every time I'm up there, because this is my life. This is my dream, and I want to do well for my team because they do so well for me. So it is a little added pressure, and I guess I just put it on myself because my team is wonderful about it. My team owner always reminds me it just doesn't matter. You know, we're not curing cancer out here. It's just racing. We're just having fun. So it must be just me. But I'll get to the bottom of it and won't give up. Keep digging at it.
There is a psychological side to every sport. I feel like we talk about it a lot here on WFO Radio, just because I've had enough experience to know that, like many other sports, we just saw in basketball, you see it in golf, if you let one shot get to you, there's a good chance that the next one will be bad. And it's really difficult to turn off the thought process, thinking about, oh, I did this, I don't want it to happen again, just to forget about the past and perform as you've practiced over and over again. But so often, that is what happens. Drivers, mistake happens, they dwell on it, it happens again. Do you find that to be easy or difficult to just forget the past and go out and perform as you train yourself to?
Well, the last 9 years of my pro stock career, I've been able to dismiss it. I mean, I played golf in high school and other sports, volleyball, basketball, track. So, you know, I'm an athlete at heart. And then I have my dad in my corner, who's the former positive mental attitude coach. So I've got him trying to help me get, my head right. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, these cars are so challenging to drive physically, but a lot of it has to do with those 6 inches between your ears, and that's the head game of it. And it's tough to dismiss what's happened in previous rounds, but my dad just always reminds me, you can't change the last shot. Just go up there with a clean head and crack it. And I'm working really hard at it. I'm trying to spend a lot more time in the gym, hoping that'll help. I want to take every competitive edge I can, because this is our year, and if it's not going to be, somebody's going to have to come and take it from us, and I'm not willing to let that happen. So I'm going to do everything in my power, and you know, my team works their tails off, so we'll just keep plugging away at it. I'm really excited and very optimistic about the rest of the year, and just got to keep it a positive mindset and go crack it.
155-point lead over Jeg. Allen is second, 204 points back. Jason is third. So you have amassed a healthy points lead. The idea of making the countdown, that is already off the table. You are going to make the countdown. Now it is just about those next six races. I have talked to some Nitro crew chiefs, and they are talking to me about how learning from the lessons of the past, winning a bunch of races early in the year, while it's great to win, and of course you always want to win, it's really about setting yourself up for sustained success over those last three races. And we'll throw the U.S. Nationals in there too, because obviously that is the most prestigious race out there on the tour. How do you do that in pro stock? It's not like you can set aside a combination or clutch discs, or maybe you can. What are you guys doing right now that you feel is going to help you over that last six race stretch?
Well, it's all about strategy, and we've learned that through watching the big teams like Greg and Jason, and then, you know, Jeg and AJ the past couple of years. And you certainly do strategize going into the countdown, maybe bring out a team car. We're still trying to get Richie out there as well. But, you know, my guys do a lot of R&D work back at the engine shop at Elite Performance. And, you know, I think what we're showing right now is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, Nick and Jake are just extremely talented people in that area. And, you know, they said, they joke around, you know, they hated us in English Town for running what we ran, but that's just the beginning. So we're going to definitely work on some things and put them under the bench and bring them out in the fall. I mean, we're running at the top of the pack right now, but our goal is to be even better then, because those are the six races that matter. You know, this 150 whatever point lead that we have right now, it doesn't matter when we pull up to the track in Charlotte. So we've just got to have our game plan together, and I certainly have got to be up on the wheel. I can't be, you know, driving like I drove the last three races before Bristol. So it's certainly something that we're planning for, strategizing for, and we're going to come out swinging.
That is very cool to hear. You mentioned Epping this weekend, or we talked about it. Obviously, last year was the first year of that race, the New England Nationals, and the place was packed. Everybody was there from the region. A lot of people who had been hoping to see NHRA Mellow Yellow Series machines on their local track. This year, I can only imagine it's going to be even bigger, as those people say, hey, man, come on out and bring a friend or two. What about going to a new market again for the second time, and how packed that place was last year?
Well, unfortunately, last year I watched it on TV because we didn't have a sponsor. That was prior to Husky Liner stepping up to the plate to carry us through the countdown. And so it'll be my first trip up to Epping, New Hampshire, and I'm really excited about it because we got such positive feedback from, you know, other teams out there and how awesome the fans were. And I'm really excited to go back, and I've got some friends in the Boston area that I'm hoping will come out, and you know, they've never been to an NHRA drag race before, so we're still trying to get new people out there, and I'm excited. I mean, we'll see what happens. This past weekend was the first really hot race that we've had, and the forecast for Epping actually looks gorgeous, so I'm really excited about having a little bit cooler weather up there. And
I would agree.
You know, my crew chiefs are great at that, so I'm excited.
You got to be melting inside the car. That's one that if I could show the people who are listening to WFO right now what every driver looks like when they get out of the car, you guys look exhausted. Obviously, the fire suit has to come open to let a little air in there. The helmet comes off. Even though you're on track for just 6.5 seconds, it seems to be grueling, especially at these hot racetracks.
Yeah, it's very grueling. I mean, that's kind of what I trained for a little bit, but you know, we wear a 15-layer Sparco fire suit. It doesn't breathe very well, but it protects us, and that's what matters. But I get out at the end of the racetrack, and I am soaking wet. I mean, you look at the track temperature screen on ESPN2, and on Sunday in Bristol, it read 137 degrees. The inside of our cars are 150. You know, we're only in there for maybe 5 minutes from the time you get buckled up to the time you get out at the other end, but it's still, I mean, adrenaline pumping, your heart's racing, and then on top of that, the heat is crazy. I still don't understand how those NHRA trophy girls and, like, Courtney Forrest, she gets out of her car and looks gorgeous, and I'm like, what the heck happened to me? I look like I just ran 37 miles, but it's definitely brutal out there in the summer months, and Bristol is just the beginning of that, so we'll just have to keep fighting at it.
And then at Bristol, they make you push your car down the hill like you're starting a bobsled or something. Does everybody know about that?
I feel like Cool Runnings, like the bobsled movie. I'm like running, pushing my car to just get it going, and then I step up on it and kick it a couple more times like a skateboard and hop in. And once you get it rolling, the cold air feels good on you, and you get to coast down the hill. But what a beautiful facility Bristol is, and I absolutely love going there every year, and just a lot of fun.
Well, you definitely have a huge fan base there. They represented in all aspects of the sport. They were you could hear fans over the cars at times throughout the weekend, and that is always cool when the drag racing fans are cheering for their driver, whoever it may be, loud enough that you can hear them down on the track. That is a very cool thing. Erica, thank you so much for joining us on WFO. I always appreciate catching up with you after your wins and dental appointments, and maybe next weekend we'll talk again after Epping. How about it?
Sounds like a plan to me, Joe. Thank you so much.
Erica Enders-Stevens with us here on WFO Radio, and she goes back at it this weekend in Epping, New Hampshire. I'm very much looking forward to that and watching how the whole countdown situation plays out for that Elite Motorsports team. All right, we got one more to go. That's Pete Farber in Pro Modified, but before we do that, I want to take a moment to recognize some old school friends of mine. The Nuttall family were out there. Their daughter Shannon was taking part in the junior dragster demonstration. I informed their youngest child that 5 years old is now the new age for junior dragster racing, and he got a big smile on his face. He thought he had to wait till he was 8, but he now knows the age is 5 and he is 6, which means he's ready to go. He's good to go. And the kid got just a huge smile on his face. Wanted to say what's up to them and thank you for rocking the WFOradio.com stickers on the side of their junior dragsters. That was super cool. They even got some WFO Radio listeners down there, and we met a bunch of WFO Radio listeners just walking through the pits. The guys from Buffalo, Larry from Buffalo, who sends the questions, what's up? Had his brother out there for the very first time. The guys from Ignition, Restrictor Plate, and Millerman 2 Brian, who are in our fantasy league, and their wives, and just a lot of WFO Radio listeners. And folks, if this is your first time listening to the Nitro Show, first of all, where have you been? Welcome aboard. You can hear the winners here every week. Look back in the archive. There is no greater location to hear from NHRA Mellow Yellow Series drivers and personalities. I don't think so. I mean, maybe someone can challenge the claim, but I really don't think so. We have got the star power. If you like NHRA Mellow Yellow Series drag racing and Lucas Oil Series drag racing and Pro Modified drag racing, we have got the star power, baby. But our biggest challenge is new listener acquisition, getting people to click the link. So if you see the link on Twitter, if you follow at WFO Radio or me at WFO Joe, and you see us tweet a link, retweet the link. Or let your friends know, hey, download this podcast or get this WFO Radio app. It's free. You'll love the show. People can listen while they work, listen on the go. We even have the story of our listener who listens while he's in the movie theater with his special lady friend, which we don't recommend that. You might get in trouble. But the bottom line is search WFO Radio online, whether it be on Google or whatever search engine you use. You can download the WFO Radio app in the App Store and Google Play. You can listen on Stitcher, which is a great podcast app. Or TuneIn, another great podcast app. You can listen a myriad of ways, but we encourage you to listen every week and tell a friend or two about WFO. That'll help us grow in a big, big way, and we would certainly appreciate it. Anybody going to be in Epping this weekend? I'm going to be up there. If we got any WFO Radio listeners, come on out. The track walk in Bristol was spectacular. I didn't get an official stat as to was it the biggest of all time or not. I do know there was a massive crowd, and we ran into WFO listeners. We made some new WFO listener friends, people from out there in Colorado who are coming out. They're getting ready for the Mopar Mile High Nationals, but they came to Bristol, and now they're fans of WFO. Just super cool. Hopefully, we can meet up with some friends out there in Epping this weekend. Speaking of New England, we're going to speak with Pete Farber, who is from Massachusetts, when we return after his first NHRA Pro Modified win, all coming up on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Whether you're a bracket racer who wants to get better or a thrill seeker looking to cross it off your bucket list, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School can put you on the right track. Don't believe me? Tell him, Frank.
No matter how little or how much experience you have, we've got a program for you. So if driving a dragster is on your bucket list, there's no better time than now. And if you'd like to be a pro, well, here's the newest funny car chap, Jack Beckman.
Hey, this is Jack Beckman. Long before I was Fast Jack, I was a bracket racer who went to the Frank Hawley School. The time I spent there was some of the most exciting, intense, and fulfilling moments ever in a race car. I feel the curriculum Frank developed greatly helped me win not only the Super Comp, but also the NHRA Nitro Funny Car Championship. Frank put me on the right track. What are you waiting for?
Call them at 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223. Or visit frankhawley.com.
Get fired up on the WFO line.
WFO, Joe.
954-889-6796.
It's just been an absolute joy to be a drag racing fan.
Go wide open, and your call may be used on the show.
Or preface by saying I'm not a Kurt Busch fan or apologist. I don't know where Greg Anderson's ego is gone, but I know one person that's going to be a big-time villain in pro stock.
That's 954-889-6796. That phone line is always WFO.
If you're looking for extra horsepower, check out WilsonManifolds.com, the leader in intake manifold and nitrous oxide development. They've set records and won championships in just about every series in professional racing. Sprint Cup, Nationwide, Camping World Truck Series, NHRA Pro Stock, right up to the Nitro classes. If you're looking for extra horsepower, check out the leader in intake and nitrous development at WilsonManifolds.com.
WFO Radio is worldwide.
Pound for pound, top fuel drivers this year against funny car drivers. I think the top fuel drivers are pretty mean right now, brother. I think we're meaner than funny car drivers. I hate to put it to them like that, but when you look at it coming to the tree, the way everybody's on the tree, look at the lights that we cut. Look at the average reaction times to our class to their class. And you tell me who's cutthroat. The numbers say it all, to be honest with you.
WFORadio.com. Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
Final segment here on WFO Radio, following up the Ford Thunder Valley Nationals out there at Bristol Dragway, presented by the Tri-City Ford Dealers. And let me tell you, what a race it was. We've been talking to the Mellow Yellow Series winners, but we've also been trying to get the Pro Mod winners in on the show, and this week we were able to do it. Joining us now from Baldwinville, Massachusetts, where we're actually heading up to his part of town this week, Pete Farber is with us. Pete, welcome to WFO. How are you?
Hi, Joe. How are you? We're pretty good.
Congratulations.
That win in Bristol.
Yeah, what about that? How much effort has gone into this win? I know you've been doing this for years. You had some success on the I side of things, but to finally get your first NHRA win, tell me about it.
Well, it's been 34 national events for me to get to that win. Whatever that took in time and energy and money, it's pretty big for us. It's cool. I don't know what to say. We worked so hard at it, and to be able to hoist that Wally at the end of the track is unbelievable.
The effort that you talk about, I don't know that the average fan watching these cars go down the racetrack understands. The money, of course, it's very expensive to go to these races, but the time and effort and input from the guys that help you, not just on race weekends, to have that all culminate in a victory has to be pretty sweet.
Well, the effort that goes into that is, I've got like two different crews. We've got a crew that goes with me at the track that travels, you know, for free for food and work their rears off all weekend. And then at home, I got, you know, friends that I beg, borrow, and steal to help me unload and get the engine out, because we go through the engine and car front to back every race, because when you pull to the start line, you can't have something go wrong, because something always will. There's always a hose or an electronic issue or something, but you just got to try to dot your I's and cross your T's so that everything's cool when you get there.
Every big win, and any drag racer that wins will say, there was one round where things fell their way. In this case, I'm looking at that first round run against Danny Rowe, where Danny was really the only driver, one of a couple. Steve got down the track too, but there were a couple of drivers that got down well and red lighted. Danny with a 16th out red light ran low ET of the round, 596.8. You were in the other lane, all over the Christmas tree with a 24. But that was the round that started your day going. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you got to have that lucky round, and we had two actually in this race. And I don't know, maybe that red car scares him, because he red lit and I didn't know where he was going. I was like, "Where's he going?" And off he went. Actually, that round was double lucky that I'm speaking about, because it didn't make it down the racetrack because I personally messed up myself because we were rushing around. When we were pulling to the start line for that round, my guy was in the car, putting the transmission in as we were pulling to the staging lanes, and I actually didn't have time to change the tune-up in the MSD we use, so I had too much power in the car, and that's why I shook. So I got double lucky there.
Wow. In the second round, you had to go up against Dan Stevenson, and Dan has been thrashing the past couple of weeks to get that car back together and was able to do it. That was a good side-by-side run. You ran 6.065, and you won it. But then the semifinals, I would imagine that's your other lucky round that you're talking about, where Jim LaRita had to shut down. You were all over the track and touched the center line but did not cross it. It was a deemed a good run. You had a 0.004 reaction time. And there was a little while on the top end where we were just staring at each other waiting for news. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, Larita's probably got one of the fastest cars there. So I tuned her up to try to make sure he was going to go, make sure it was going to go as fast as it needed to, but the both of us got in trouble. I was in a lot of trouble when I shifted it, and the car was completely sideways, and it was coming to that center wall. And as everybody knows, I've been in trouble in Bristol before. So I was out there, and it was on the stripe. I knew it was on the stripe. I didn't think I crossed it, but I couldn't step on the throttle there to go any faster, so we kind of just skated around and coasted to the would-be win. And when I jumped out and I saw you at top end, and I were just standing there. That was crazy. I learned something. I didn't know you could drive on the line and still win. I thought that was it if you touched it. So.
Yeah, well, we all learned a little something. It was very tense moments down there. But then you guys got the word that you had won, and you're setting up for the final round against Steve Matuszek. I always love to ask racers, this was your first NHRA win, but going through the prep, you knew you had a tough run in the final round. Did you allow any of those thoughts of what it would be cool to win and all the effort that you had put in to get in the way of doing your job as you were preparing for the final? You ran 6:08 in the final.
Well, they're tough customers, and I've told Steve, Danny, and Jimmy Rector that those guys are tough customers every time you pull the starting line. But when I ran Lurita, that taught me the threshold of where my car would not go or go. So I just set it up to go 6:07 like I ran Stevenson, and it repeated because it is a very good car. And I'm usually pretty good on the tree. I gave myself a little extra time there because I didn't want a red light because we were 004 before. And it just motored on down through there. And then, I don't know, Jimmy must have been coming after me hard, I guess, because he looked like he over the track, powered the track out there at 330 feet where I got in trouble before. So nobody was underestimating anybody, and we all come full bore at each other when we're burnout to turnout.
It's interesting because these cars are so wild, and yet you've got a lot of power, but you're using volunteers as your crew, and you guys are like businessmen who are out there doing this on the weekends, which is a great thing, but it really ratchets up the pressure on you. Once that win light came on, Pete, and you realized, hey, I'm the winner, I won it, we won, it's over, we did it, it's over, how did that feel to have that pressure and all that, everything associated with trying to get your first win come through having achieved it?
It's just an all-time high. You know, it's an all-time natural high, and the guys are so happy on the crew. We've come down, coming down to retired run with tears in your eyes because you just, 34 national events, it takes so much to get to 34 national events. Now you've got cars that can't get into one national event because there's so many cars want to run the NHRA, and it is the fastest, most greatest series out there at ProMod. I mean, there's nothing better than that. Be able to say, you can say you're good, but I can honestly feel I can say I'm one of the best now because I took one home. I feel I've entered an elite group of ProMod racers that have been able to win in ProMod.
That is an absolute fact. Of course, the series heading to Epping this weekend. No ProMod on the schedule. When is your next race? And the series coming to your hometown, I'm sure you would love to be racing this weekend.
I would like to go to New England Dragway and race there. Got a lot of hometown people that love me. And I don't know, we're not headed there, but we're headed up to Norwalk.
There you go.
For 4th of July.
And that will be the next race for the ProMod Association. Well, Pete, congratulations. It was a lot of fun watching it. And I ended up speaking with you at PBIR at your preseason test and kind of been having an eye on you throughout the year and watching as you guys get this car dialed in and tuned up and to see you get your first win in the NHRA. It was a lot of fun. It was very exciting. Great show. The whole ProMod guys put on a great show. And what I think is cool is it's all going to be on TV during the winter this year. We'll be able to follow along race by race. And that's got to be cool to be a part of that as well.
Yeah, I can't wait to see all that. We'll see how my emotions look on those TV screens. That's going to be pretty cool.
Yes, it will be very cool. And I know we'll all be watching. Pete, congratulations. I know you are super swamped with various things with your business and with racing. Thanks for making the time for us here on WFO Radio. I appreciate it.
Anytime, Joe. Thank you.
Thanks, Pete. Pete Farber with us here on WFO Radio, and that completes another winner's edition. Pete Farber, Erica, Tommy Johnson, Sean Langdon. That is a great show, and that's what WFO Radio is all about. We do it every week. Maybe this is your first time listening. I say this a lot because it's true. Every week we've got new first-time listeners. Every week our listeners are supposed to be inviting new listeners every week for us to grow, talking to their friends, bothering them, getting in their face, asking them questions. Come on, listen to the show. Check it out. Do you have an iPhone? Do you have an Android phone? Download the app. Check it out. You'll like it. And we say it all the time. Hey, if your friend pestered you into listening to the show, we're sorry about it. But we've got winners that you want to hear, guys like Pete Farber. How cool is that? 34 national events. What does that represent in man hours? What does that represent in time away from home, hard work, busted knuckles? That Wally makes all the difference in the world. And by the way, those Pro Mod cars are super cool. It was very cool to see Pete get his first win out there in Thunder Valley. And tremendous to have him on WFO Radio as well. So thanks to Pete Farber and the Pro Mod community for helping hook us up with the Pro Mod winners on the WFO Radio Winners Editions. So we had Erica, we had Langdon, we had Tommy Johnson, we had Alan Reinhart. Now that's what I call a show. And I said it earlier, but I'm going to say it again because it was so true. The folks at Bristol Dragway were awesome. It was a spectacular event. And the crowd were just so loud. Something that you don't normally hear unless you go to a football game or a baseball game. Big home run, everybody goes crazy. Well, when drivers that large numbers of people won, they were cheering. They were going nuts. They were enthusiastic. They were yelling and screaming and into it. Everything that happened. They were raucous is what it was. Which I loved. I loved that. A raucous crowd at a drag race. I would like to see more of that. One thing that you don't get a lot of at a drag race is a raucous crowd. Because you've got a John Force fan sitting next to a DSR fan and a DSR fan sitting next to a Tim Wilkerson fan. And there's not really clusters of fans. They don't sit together. Like at the World Cup, you could hear the USA fans all together and the Ghana fans all together. How about that, huh? USA winning our first World Cup match, meaning the first match we've played of the World Cup since like the 1930s. And we are on path to escape the group of death. Are you interested in the World Cup? Maybe not. Let me give you my World Cup pitch for 2 seconds. It is the USA versus the world in something. You're not interested in that? You're not interested in watching your countrymen, your country, your flag battle against the other world? It might not be the most important thing to us. Our best athletes might not end up playing soccer. They end up playing football or basketball or baseball. But we still have a lot of great athletes here in the United States of America. People with ties to the good old US of A. And to the rest of the world, there is nothing but soccer. That's it. It's the World Cup and then everything else way below that. You're not going to root on your countrymen? Couple times a week in a underdog role? Come on, get in, get on, get in it. I'm in it. I got in from traveling right before the game, sat down, flipped it on. 34 seconds into the match, we've got a goal. Now that's big. Of course, Ghana came back, tied it up, then we took the lead. That Jozy Altidore injury, that's bad news. He's from down here, and so very sad. It looks like he's going to miss the remainder of the cup. But bottom line, not a lot of people love soccer here in the United States. Some do, and more are growing every day. A lot of kids play the sport. This is the pinnacle of world sport, period. This is the most popular thing that planet Earth has to offer. If the United States is in it, we need your support. There you go. Now, do you have to become a big soccer fan and renounce your fandom and everything else? No, absolutely not. But I'm in on it, baby. Go USA. We are in the group of death, and no one expects us to advance. We just took a major, major step. And when they say the USA can't do it, I say, yes, we can do it. And so I am looking forward to it. Well, there you go. That's my big World Cup speech. WFO stickers. Do you want some free WFO radio stickers? All you have to do is send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Castello Media, care of WFO Radio, P.O. Box 848353, Pembroke Pines, Florida, 33084. Send a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll stuff it full of WFO radio stickers and turn it around and send it back rapidly. And we did have a little bit of an issue. That was all my fault. We talked about it on last week's Ignition show. I said WFO stickers. I didn't give the exact detail, and they didn't put it in the right box. Bottom line, we got it all straightened out, baby. Castello Media, WFO Radio, P.O. Box 84835. 1-800-253-8253, Pembroke Pines, Florida, 33084, and then you can represent WFO with your WFO radio stickers, the freebie kind. Not the really cool kind like on Dan Pomponio's car. How about Dan Pomponio and Todd Venny getting to the final round of a regional race? Venny comes out on top. That's Jay Blake, Follow a Dream. Two tough machines up there in the Northeast. Very, very cool. The WFO radio sticker going rounds. WFO radio stickers on junior dragsters. WFO radio stickers on all kinds of stuff. You can still purchase on the website the big ones, but the little icon stickers like the WFO radio app icon, those are free. We want you to stick them on stuff. Send us a self-addressed stamped envelope. Castello Media, WFO Radio, P.O. Box 848353, Pembroke Pines, Florida, 33084. There you have it. Thanks to Erica for coming on the show, and Pete, Tommy Johnson for coming on the show, Sean Langdon for coming on the show. Absolutely great stuff. Of course, Alan Reinhart starting us off right. I had a great time. We have our Ignition show Wednesday night, 8 p.m. We're going to talk NASCAR. Jimmy Johnson wins another one out there in Michigan. They're going 215 miles an hour. We're going to do our fantasy results, talk a little IndyCar Formula One. It's going to be great. It has been brought to my attention that that show, the Ignition show, is just an entertainment show wrapped in auto racing wrapping paper, and that if you like morning shows, if you like morning drive radio, if you like those kind of shows, that you'll probably like this. Different characters on the show, popping in, popping out, that kind of stuff. In fact, the question was in the email if I could make this show more like that show, but about drag racing. And I will give the answer tomorrow on that show. But I would love to get more of our NHRA listeners in on the Ignition show, figure out what's going on. Maybe you like it, maybe you won't. You'll never have to click that button ever again if you don't, I promise. That's going to do it. Thanks, everybody. If you're in Epping, look me up. I'll be out there. Follow at WFO Joe or at WFO Radio. I will be in Epping in a couple of days. Then Chicago the following week. So if you're going to be out there in Chi-Town, come on out. Hang with us. I will be there. And we'll see you next time right here on WFO Radio.
WFO!
The views and opinions of the hosts, guests, or callers do not necessarily reflect that of the station ownership, advertisers, or agencies.
Say Bristol, baby, I say Thunder Valley. Let's do it.
That was terrible.
Horrendous.
I'm offended.
I'm appalled.
So what are we going to do?
What else?
Email it to everybody we know.
Good idea.
I love WFO Radio.